How long did it take?
About an hour.
Okay, we are plugged in. Ready to go.
Okay.
I'm joined by Dr. Reamer, of course, our great friend, and Ralph Usitola. Garth won't be with us today.
Hello, Adam.
How are you going? Garth's not with us today. He's in the town getting supplies on his horse and cart. So he's a bit busy, but I am in great company, and we're doing a special show today in regards to... Dr. Reamer and Ralph's great work at the Natural Solutions Foundation, also the upcoming marches happening across Australia on the 21st of June. And we're very much looking forward to it. So it's great to have you guys here. How you been going?
We've been going really well.
All good.
And we know we're doing great work because we're being attacked viciously, brutally, and in brand new ways. So we must be on the right track. And I have to say, before we go any further, that it is a real pleasure and honor to be with you again, Adam. You are doing magnificent work. You are getting the word out. You are getting the truth out. And you're doing it in a way that is both passionate and elegant. And I'm really honored to be your associate. So thanks for the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Ditto to that, Adam.
I'm like a chicken with no head running around the backyard, though. I'm trying to run a business with my wife. And all this stuff that's happening in your normal day-to-day life, as you guys know, and then, managing the podcast and the shows and the social media and the emails and everything like that. So if I could do more, I would, but it's physically not possible at the moment. But I'm happy with what I am doing because at least it's something. It's better than nothing, isn't it?
You know, that's a really, really important point. First of all, you're not doing nothing. You're doing a great deal, Adam. You're very active, and you're putting information out in ways that people can access and can believe, and that's very important. But second of all, even if you were doing much, much, much less, it is the doing of every little bit that gives us the power and the strength and the capacity to resist the people who are lying, the people who are dissembling, the people who don't scruple to make up stuff and to lie about us and to lie about you and to lie about vaccines and to lie about truth and freedom and so on. It's all of us collectively doing every little bit that we do that makes the difference. Because here's the dirty little secret. I've said this before and I will say it again. Here is exactly what the other side, the corporatist side, the crony side, the globalist side, the tyranny side, call it what you will, here is what they do not want you to know. And here is, in essence, why the Natural Solutions Foundation is attacked so badly. Because we tell people what I'm about to tell you, and that is that they're very weak and they're very vulnerable. And in fact, all the power resides with us. And when we push back every single time, they step back, they collapse. Now, how extraordinary. They're that weak. Now, they're well-funded. They've got more money than God. And when they run out of money, they have their buddies print some more for them because they're all in that same cartel where that kind of thing happens all the time. But what they don't have is fundamentally, at the ethical side, they don't have the truth on their side, and that matters. But they, practically speaking, they don't have the numbers. There are very few of them. They have the dollars, but they don't have the numbers. We are the numbers. And if we resist, if we say, don't you dare, in the many, many ways that we all say it, then they can do nothing.
Not
nothing.
Not there. I love that saying, when the debate is lost, slander becomes the tool of the loser, which is cool, which is true, but the loser can also become the coward. And for me, cowards can be a little bit dangerous in a way, because they're not someone that will come up to your face and tell you what they think. They'll do it behind your back.
Well, they'll kind of jab you from behind.
Yeah, it makes them a little bit shady for me, but We have managed to expose a few of those, and they're just that. They're just cowards, and they don't want a debate. As you know, we've set up a debate challenge.
Let's talk about that issue.
It's a very important thing, and it's worked wonders. It was sort of a collective idea, and you, through the Dr. Rima Truth Reports, put up a debate challenge, which was very elegantly and nicely written. I put it out there to the New Greens leader. I put it out there to our MPs, federal, state, all around the place. I put it out to our health ministers. I put it out to just general anti-vaxxers, people with very strong opinions on social media, and I haven't been able to get someone to debate us. I tried to use this. I've been using this debate challenge to get them off the protest pages on Facebook that are coming up in Australia, which we'll talk about later. But they're not about that. They're about protests that are happening around the country and people to get information from there. And they're trying to bully people and pick on people and put all this stuff in. So I generally just go in, put some info up with that debate challenge, and they either disappear or they sort of disappear for a while and then come back and then try again, but they never answer me. Some have directly answered me and just said no. So sorry, Ralph and Dr. Rima, I have been unable to get a debate going. I can't do it.
Well, you know, we've been doing the same thing. We've been trying to get them to debate for quite a while. And it is the truth of the matter is they refuse to debate. I would think because they know they don't really have the ammunition to debate with. They pretend that they're refusing to debate because the science is settled.
Yeah, they want all this information, Ralph.
And of course, anyone who believes the science is settled is really just trying not to debate.
They keep asking for all this information after information after information, and they're getting the information, but it's never good enough for them, but they don't offer anything in return. And then some of them are very outspoken, but they won't debate us. I'm like, come on and talk to us.
See, that's a fascinating point. They accuse us of being unscientific. And then when we say, we have the science and we'd love to share it with you.
It's not good enough.
As a matter of fact, we'll debate you.
No.
then they vanish. So I would say that these are bullies and cowards. And they really know that they have nothing. I believe that debate challenge extended, if I'm not mistaken, to the Prime Minister of Australia, to the Minister of Health of Australia, and to a number of other high-profile characters, members of Parliament. And ultimately, they all said, Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Some MPs. There was Graham, MP in Queensland, I think, who was very outspoken. He said the science is settled and Labor will be voting for all these new draconian vaccine regulations and laws being pushed through. So we asked him and, you know, we got back a sort of a lukewarm response that, Graham's not really up to speed with vaccines and doesn't really know enough about it. You're better to ask the health ministers. And I said, well, why did he make that comment that the science is settled if he doesn't know? That's ludicrous. And they didn't answer me. So
oddly, they didn't answer you. But the point is that if you give people a script and the script is in Greek and they don't speak Greek, or the script is in Urdu and they don't speak Urdu, then they will make sounds, their lips will move, and their teeth will clack, and noise will come out because they activate their vocal cords with air, and they have no idea what they're saying. When I lived in the United States, I had the great pleasure of being part of a Balkan women's choir, which makes the most amazing sounds together. I loved it because the harmonies were so astonishing. I had absolutely no idea what I was saying. I was saying syllables that I was told to say, and I was assured that they were not obscene or pornographic. They were generally love songs and social commentaries. And I didn't care what it meant, because the issue was the sound in combination with other people. Well, that's a very beautiful way of making what are in essence nonsense syllables. This is a very ugly way of doing the same.
Yeah.
And one of the nonsense syllable combinations that they are told to string together is the science is settled. That doesn't even mean anything. It's like saying the cucumbers are walking. It doesn't mean anything. Science never settles. Politics settles. Belief settles. Science unsettles by its very nature. New things drive out old settled beliefs. That is how science works. Otherwise, it's religion. So the religion is settled, but the science can never be.
That's exactly right. And that's,
so what are they talking about?
That's the response we have got from almost all of them, and even the pro-vaxxers on social media. The science is settled. I keep asking, what do you mean? They don't answer. But this is what you're getting from our MPs and general, you know, just general politicians around Australia that we've asked. The science is settled. Unvaccinated kids are a threat to our society, and that's that. I'm living in a Twilight Zone episode.
Right.
They're living in a Twilight Zone.
Yeah,
episode.
I know, but I feel like I am as well. Where everyone's crazy. I know I'm not crazy, but they're making me seem like the crazy one. It's absolutely insane. I haven't found one politician that comes out with anything good to say.
For radicals. It is something called Rules for Radicals, a book by a man by the name of Valinsky, set out how you do not have debate, how you do not engage in real meaningful communication with people, but rather engage in techniques that isolate and ridicule and destroy the reputations of the people you disagree with, so that you don't ever have to actually defend your ideas. All you have to do is attack those that do not agree with your ideas. And it's used very effectively as a mind control technique, essentially.
Yeah.
You know what the sad thing is? The sad thing is it works so well.
It's right. It's just, yeah, but it's a media spin as well. They're pumping out fear. And that's what they do so well. But in regards to the debate challenge, looking at something here that was sent to me today by one of the organizers of one of these events, they're really pushing that this is about human dignity and human rights, and it's about keeping our human rights and our God-given rights to say no. Human dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms are to be fully respected, and the interests and welfare of the individual should have priority over the sole interest of science or society. There's a bit of a touchy thing here because they're trying to make these marches about that, which is absolutely the way to go. Otherwise, people will argue so much, and when someone's on the fence and they're not, say a mum is not sure about vaccines and they go on to the protest sites and people, trolls are on there and everyone's arguing, it may spook them off and they might not go to the protests in Sydney and Melbourne and Brisbane and all these places. But so they're trying to keep it just about the protests, and there is some great information going up there. But then you get the trolls coming on saying, well, you're only allowing the anti-vaxxers to have their say, but you're blocking the pro-vaxxers, which is not true. But you can see the dilemma we have here. So that's when I came in with this Dr. Rima Truth Reports debate challenge, which you guys did up. I've put it everywhere. That was the idea to get them to get off those pages and come on and talk to us. And I said, you will be respected. We will give you the floor. There's going to be some hardcore information flying around, but come on and do the debate. And when we're not going to slander, it will be totally respectful. And let people have their say. You've written a great letter here, Dr. Rima, to people. You've outlined the following propositions that we will debate people on. Vaccines are safe, effective, cost-effective, or any combination of these. Vaccines offer meaningful social and individual protection. Vaccine benefits outweigh the risks to societies and individuals. Vaccine damage is rare and inconsequential. vaccine scientists settled in favour of vaccination. Vaccine debate does not fall under free speech protections and should be suppressed. Forced vaccination does not violate fundamental human rights, including informed consent and the Nuremberg Code. You've outlined this all perfectly with your email. I've also added mine. And, you know, they won't do it. And I feel like it's a great idea because it's like an old-fashioned duel in the Wild West, isn't it? It's like I like to stop slandering and stop going in and bullying people. A lot of them are mothers and they're not sure about the science of vaccines. You know, they're just not sure if they want to put their child at risk, and they're interested in going along to the protests and finding out some information. And these people are bullying and pushing, and it's like, come on and do it to us, you know, come on here. But they won't, and they disappear for a while, and they change their Facebook image, and then they come back and they bully people again. So it's a strange situation to be in. But in regards to the protests themselves and people, it's really exploded here. So very good and positive news to give to you guys.
It is good, and it really is looking positive.
And a lot of women, mainly women, I guess, young mums now who are starting to say, hang on here, I don't need anybody to tell me, I don't need a pro-vaccine person to tell me that vaccines are safe and effective. All I have to do is look around me at the autism rates and the brain damage and the allergies and the asthma and the children's hospitals full. They can see it. A lot of them, their children or their firstborn children have had adverse reactions. My brother had a terrible adverse reaction and could have died. This was before I was born, and it scared the hell out of my parents. A lot of millions of people have had these reactions, and they've been quiet about it because they don't know what to do, and now this is giving them a voice. And with a little bit of research, it's great and positive.
Let me add that they have been quiet about it, even though many, many, many times the parents of the people who have had the reactions or the adults who have had the reaction go to their trusted source of information, their doctor, and they say, this is a vaccine reaction. And the doctor says, oh, piffle, it couldn't possibly be a vaccine reaction. Surely, oh, ignorant person, you are mistaken. So please stop saying that because you're just showing your ignorance or some variation thereof. And so the person with the injured party or the injured party themselves kind of slinks off and says, that's funny, I could have sworn it was a vaccine reaction. Sort of looked like a vaccine reaction to me, but I guess it wasn't because the doctor said it wasn't. And now people are thankfully changing that subservient mental attitude toward their healthcare professionals and saying, excuse me, I'm right and you're wrong. And good on them.
And in the and in more news of the day, former CDC Director Julie Gerberding, Gerberding, just sold 38,368 shares of Merck stock for $2.3 million. She was in charge of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention from 2002 to 2009, which includes the years the FDA approved the Merck vaccinations that we have all come to realize are destroying our human genome.
You mean like Gardasil?
Now, $2.3 million is not very much, frankly. Hamburg, head of FDA for quite for a while.
Margaret Hamburg.
Right, made $2 million in 1 year alone from her position as a vaccine advisor to the Merck or one of the other big countries.
No, she was a member of the board of Henry Schein, the organization, the company that provides more dental amalgam than any other company in the world. Henry Schein paid her $2 million when she was on the board as her share of the goodies. And then Margaret Hamburg fought tooth and nail to prevent amalgams from being listed as toxic materials. When the court required that amalgams be listed on the FDA website as a toxic material, the website was put up and then taken down immediately because the court didn't say it had to stay up. It just said it had to be put up.
Right, exactly.
So it was a case.
Well, this is the type of person, but these guys are pikers. Dr. Offit. Offit,
oh,
the prophet,
yeah,
from Philadelphia Children's Hospital, the prestigious Philadelphia Children's Hospital, which does not allow vitamin C in, but demands every single vaccine. That hospital, well, how much was he making on one of the
We believe that his first year profit on the Rotatec vaccine, which gives children meningitis and lethal pneumonia, and nobody in the United States or Canada, nobody dies from rotavirus. This is a nonsense vaccine, if ever there was one. We believe that his, oh, and it also gives children a torsion of the bowel, which is a surgical emergency of life-threatening proportion. We believe that his first-year profits were about $48 million.
It's,
give or take.
This is interesting.
And it goes up in there. Merck sold $300 million worth of measles vaccines after the measles pandemic scare. 147.
Oh, you mean 110 cases of measles in the United States? Is that the pandemic scare you had in mind?
Of course. That's less people having getting the measles than actually die from the measles shot.
Well, now let's see. There were 53,000 children, I believe, if I recall correctly, who received a diagnosis of autism in the same time. And last year, there were 5,800 children in the United States who died directly from, established that they died directly from, the pertussis vaccine. Would that be in any way related to the 110 cases of measles, a benign disease, unless you are severely malnourished and in a deathly situation, like, for instance, the children in Nepal who are being vaccinated in order to protect them from measles after they have had major earthquakes that have destroyed their homes, taken away any possibility of clean water. They're stressed, they're malnourished, they're living in tents or not even in tents in the winter in the Himalayas. And instead of being protected from cholera, from typhus, from typhoid, from the filth diseases, they are being allegedly protected from measles, which they will shed as everyone who gets the measles virus and the mumps virus and the rubella virus does. They will shed measles, mumps, and rubella and guarantee that there will be an epidemic from them. And then the same organizations, Gavi and the Gates Organization and the World Health Organization and the United States and, you know, the usual genocidal players, they'll come sweeping in and say, oh, my goodness, everybody needs more vaccines. And they will annihilate and destroy the people of Nepal. That same measles vaccine, is that the one you had in mind?
Yes, indeed, Dr. Rima. That's the one I had in mind. You know, you got to consider the vaccines themselves to be a viral marketing technique. It's like an advertising technique. Someone gets a vaccine, which, you know, what was the was it the measles vaccine? It's only 18% effective, if that. And they become
That's a flu vaccine.
They become a customer for life because of the adverse reactions, side effects, and et cetera, et cetera. And you become literally the person who gets the vaccine literally becomes a viral marketing tool for the drug companies. They become the advertisement, if you will. And if we were rational thinking people, we would run as fast as we can in the other direction once we see what the effect of that marketing is. But instead, they are trapped and customers for life, a short, sad life, but for life.
So it's the vaccines, Ralph, are so cheap to produce, but the real money's in the side effects.
The real money is in the downstream effects.
The long-term.
They're not side effects. Yeah. They're in the downstream effects. And when we talk about real money, we're talking about the money in cancer, which is the single most profitable disease ever encountered by the human species. We're talking about the money in MS. We're talking about the money in suboptimal immune status. We're talking about the money in infertility. We're talking about the money in each of the chronic degenerative diseases. Diabetes, oh my goodness, diabetes is such good business. And diabetes is becoming, oh, autism, whoa, diabetes and autism are becoming common childhood diseases in just a few decades. Now, that should worry you, because there's no way that they could possibly be common diseases from a genetic point of view. They can only be common diseases from an environmental, toxicological point of view. And where are the toxins coming from? The syringe of death.
Exactly, Dr. Nima. And it's more than that. It's it is part of a bigger plan. And we have to begin to see the bigger plan in order to understand the depth of the evil that we're dealing with. It's not the useful idiots that are the problem. And, you know, Adam, we were talking earlier with you about people who won't debate, the people who have the set view that's been triggered. You know, they've been brainwashed and certain words are used and they get triggered and they say certain words. Those useful idiots are not the problem. The problem are the people behind them who have a very clear agenda. And it is an agenda that is built around the madness of collectivism in a very real sense. And that madness is best expressed through something called the Global Health Security Initiative, the GHSI. It's an organization that arises out of the United Nations. It's one of those wonderful public-private partnerships that they so much love. And it includes all of the usual suspects. I mean, everybody from the Gates Foundation through to the CDC and, you know, all the other health authorities.
Well, it includes some specially toxic organizations that are usually in the background in these things.
Right.
For instance, the Club of Rome.
Right.
The Council on Foreign Relations. These guys usually don't show up in such public positions, but they couldn't stay home because the party was just too much fun.
Right, and the theory behind the Global Health Security Initiative is expressed by its leaders, who are social scientists, who are proteges of the Secretary General of the UN, and who have published articles in various peer-reviewed journals. It's science, folks.
And the science is settled.
Oh, yes, it's because it's science. And what is their theory? The most cost-effective way of dealing with pandemics is to reduce the number of vectors and victims. We are all vectors and victims when it comes to pandemics. And so the most cost-effective way of dealing with these herd diseases is to cull the herd.
Well, you can't
this
get
is,
sick
if you
when
will,
you're dead.
The opposite, right, the opposite of herd immunity, which, of course, we know doesn't exist. The opposite of herd immunity is exactly what they're aiming at. They believe that the way to save people from pandemics is for there to be less people.
Yeah.
And this is insanity, but it is the logic of culling the herd.
Oh,
it
yeah.
is the logic of no individual counts. It's only the group that we need to think about. It is essentially the results of 100 years of collectivist misapprehension of human action and what it means to be a human being on this world. And it is ugly, to say the least.
You said that to them, no human being counts, no individual counts. And that's quite wrong, Ralph. No individual who isn't part of their designated group counts.
Do you really think that they're not such sociopaths or psychopaths that they actually even care about their own relatives?
They don't care about their own relatives. They care about themselves. They're
right.
the ones who count.
Oh, there's a lot of
and they think they're going to be spared.
The minions do, Ralph.
Culling.
Well, a lot of the backbenchers,
Australian Parliament, they think they're going to be spared.
Nah.
You know, the guys at the NSA who are listening to our discussion right now, they think they're going
to
be spared.
Yeah, the first.
You know, right? They don't understand. You know, it's the the best example I can give is a special KGB squad was sent into the Katanya Forest in Poland at the beginning of World War II when the Nazis and the Soviets were working together. They had, I think it was 14,000 Polish military officers and professionals and others, and they murdered them all over 4 days. They shot each one of them in the head. And then they packed up their guns and all and took a train back to Moscow, where they were met by other KGB agents who hustled them off and shot them dead.
Yeah.
Stalin and the Soviets managed to blame the Nazis for the atrocity. The Nazis just didn't have time to do it themselves, so they had to rely on the Soviets, I guess, to do it for them. But that's exactly the way the party, the inner party, treats those who are in the outer party.
Well, they use the lowest people in society, Ralph. I mean, that are backstabbers and liars and cheats, and they scam everybody. But when it comes down to the real deal, they don't want these people on their side at the end of the day, so they get rid of them because they're rats.
Exactly. And we tell the people who audit our shows, you know, for decades, we said, if only we could get the government to listen to us, and now they're listening to us all the time. So we tell these people, first of all, don't vaccinate your kids. And second of all, be very, very aware that historically, we may be the first to go, but you are the next to go. And it doesn't change. It was the same in Cambodia. It was the same in Mao's China. And it will be the same in whoever it is who's at the helm of this global system that is being introduced. These vaccines, you know, if you don't want to talk about the science because somehow or other that's settled, and I don't know what that means, but if you don't want to talk about the science, then let's talk about the political science. These people will be annihilated after they are used to annihilate us. Hands down, no question. Now, do we care? No, we don't care quite as much as we care about not giving them the opportunity to annihilate us. That we care about. And then if whatever happens to them happens as part of their karma or whatever, I'm not going to do anything bad to them. But oh my, the state certainly will one way or another. The issue is that if we're talking about freedom, if we're talking about international humanitarian law, then nobody can force us to accept anything into our bodies that we do not choose to accept into our bodies, period, end of discussion. And that's where the question of whether international law pertains within individual countries becomes so interesting. The short answer, yes, indeed it does. But the long answer is the one that Ralph needs to give because he's an expert in this.
Thank you very much. You know, we really have to look at it. You know, it is not about the science, folks. Dr. Rima has said earlier that the science is settled and it's against vaccination. The pseudoscience, the crony corporatist tainted pseudoscience, is the only science that's acceptable to the government agencies and to the mass media. And those government agencies, you know, you don't think, for example, Americans that are listening, that the CDC actually tests vaccines, do you? They accept the crony science that's produced by the same companies that get fined billions of dollars for lying and cheating.
They don't even have to present.
Where a series of whistleblowers have come forth to show that these drug-pushing companies are the most corrupt. I shouldn't say the most. I mean, probably the government agencies are more corrupt, but these are among the most corrupt institutions in our society. I mean, 98 million monkey virus tainted doses of the polio vaccine were shot into Americans, a vaccine which is now causing a big uptick in cancer. And they knew. They knew.
Wait,
and
it was just
too expensive to spend 5 cents more per dose to, you know, to strain the monkey virus out.
When you say monkey virus, you have to be specific that it's not just any monkey virus. So, oh my goodness, some foreign DNA got in there, which is bad enough. It was SV40, a known leukemia, breast cancer, prostate cancer, brain cancer causing virus, that particular monkey virus. And although it would have cost just a few pennies more per dose, if that, the CDC said they did not want to burden the manufacturers with an additional financial requirement. Whoa. So better they should burden your four-year-old with leukemia, right?
And now, of course, folks, we are the ones who are the 4 years old, and we are the ones who are becoming the lifelong customers for Big Pharma. So we have the situation where the governments rely on the foxes to keep an eye on the chicken coop, and we wonder why. And then we pass laws all over the world that exempts these same drug pushing companies from any legal responsibility for the damages their vaccines cause. And we wonder why the vaccines are getting less safe. Has anyone heard of incentives? Anyway, so we have that situation essentially where the governments of the world have abrogated their responsibility to protect us from these predators. And we need to turn to a higher law, if you will, to try to overcome this issue. It's not the science. It is the morality and the legality that we have to focus on. It is informed consent, which in my humble opinion, trumps governmental impositions. There is no exemption or exception to the informed consent rule. It has been literally international law since the time of the Hippocratic Oath. And we've carefully analyzed that. And if you go to DrRemaTruthReports.com, you'll find in our blogs a lot of information about informed consent, about how informed consent arises from legal principles that are as ancient as the Hippocratic Oath, but also as recent as the results of World War II. Wars have results. And one thing that World War II did in the aftermath was to impose principles or standards of international law. Now, these were imposed on the losers and not on the victors. And the victors, in many ways, were as bad as the losers, of course, as they are in every war. But we imposed on the losers basically civilized principles. And the most famous of the trials was not, in this regard, was not really the trial of the top Nazi leaders, the International Tribunal in Nuremberg, but rather what are called the subsequent Nuremberg trials, which were handled directly by a United States military court. And most important of those was the doctor's trial, in which a bunch of Nazi doctors were put on trial for violating the principle of informed consent. And some of them were hung. And in the process of that, something called the Nuremberg Code was devised by American military authority and imposed on the German losers in the war. Now, under the Geneva Conventions, if a prevailing party in a war tries members of the other side for crimes, it must apply to that other side the same laws that it applies to its own people. And so the United States, by creating the Nuremberg Code, has made itself bound by the Nuremberg Code.
Even though
the Nuremberg Code is very clear as to what their obligations are. Yes, Dr. Rima,
even though the United States very carefully did not ratify the Nuremberg Code, the Nuremberg Convention. It said, no, we really don't want to do that, thinking that it thereby exempted itself from the provisions. In fact, because of what Ralph, who, for those of you who don't know, it's important for you to understand that he is an attorney. He is a freedom rights attorney. He is a regulatory law attorney in the United States. Even though the United States government thought that it was exempting itself from those laws. Turns out that under the Geneva Code, the Geneva Convention, to which it is a signatory, if it applied the laws that resulted in doctors being hanged for their efforts in the Nazi activities, those same laws and codes and convention are therefore applicable to its own people. And among those laws and terms and conventions is the concept very clearly spelled out with absolutely no wiggle room of informed consent. We win.
Indeed. And that is the key here. The concept of informed consent. You got to start by understanding that not only is the science never settled, but medicine is not an exact science. It is, in fact, in the words of the famous North Carolina case from 1903, the Biggs case, it is exactly not an exact science. And people have reserved to themselves, as the case says, the right to not believe in medicine, but rather to have their faith in other methods of healing. And that's been the law for a long time. In 1905, the United States Supreme Court in the Jacobson case said that, of course, if it can be shown that a vaccine can hurt someone, that the courts have the power to intervene to protect them. In 2013, the Supreme Court said in the McNeely case, of course, we've always said that if some government agent wants to put a needle in your body, you have the right to go to court and complain about it. The law is clear. It's not on the side of the vaxxers.
You might and say,
especially in the United States, law, we have.
Might say the law is settled. Might you?
Right. Exactly. The law is settled. And you know, of course, in a country like Australia, where there is no Bill of Rights, we have a bigger problem. But still, the same international law applies. And even if they have a law that says, you can lose your welfare benefits if you don't have your children vaccinated. Let's get the poor kids first, right? Even if you have that law goes directly against the Nuremberg Code requirement that you not use duress to control people's informed consent. The informed consent is not just holding a gun to someone's head and saying, we're going to stick this needle in your body. No, it's withholding public benefits. It's all forms of coercion and fraud and deception. That all is covered in the Nuremberg Code, and all of medicine, which is always experimental, is covered. And certainly vaccination, which, as again the United States Supreme Court said, is unavoidably unsafe. You know, those who say the science is settled, it's safe and effective, well, gee, you know, every court that's had a chance to look at it has said the opposite. The Italian High Court has held the vaccines responsible for autism. Does it cause autism directly? Well, no. It causes demyelination of the sheathing around the neurons, and that's what leads to the autism. But it's clearly the cause. It is a sufficient cause. It may not be the only cause. There may be some genetic effects involved, but it's very clear.
It's clear,
and as a result of that, the right to informed consent is absolutely something you have to invoke, but you can't just be silent. Silence is acquiescence. Unless you are screaming, I don't consent, they can ignore, they're going to ignore you. In the McNeely case, McNeely was actually saying, I don't consent, don't do this to me, I don't consent to this. And they had him tied down to a gurney and were taking blood from him without consent. And that's the sort of thing that is going to become more common. Parents are going to have their children seized. They're having it happen already. Parents are going to find that they have to decide between risking their children's lives and getting the public benefits that they need in order to keep their children alive.
Exactly.
These are Sophie's choices, to remind you of a story from World War II that was horrendous. How do you choose which child will live and which will die? Who has the right to make that choice? These are moral issues. It doesn't matter what the science is.
If Australia was not a participant in the Nuremberg subsequent trials, would the same law apply to Australia?
I believe that you can reach back to the Hippocratic Oath and find that law. I don't believe that, I think that all that the Nuremberg Code did was encode what was already the law. And by the way, that's precisely what they said they were doing. They couldn't try the Nazi doctors on a new law. So they said, this is what the law has always been. And they were right about that. And that law is an international law that is binding on all nations. It does not, you know, this is a key human right that we must uphold.
I've already said they're going to go further. That was from top government officials. I heard it. They've said it. They've admitted that they intend to go further. And what that means to me is total compulsory vaccinations for all children in Australia.
It's not just
California. They don't talk about it, but this Bill 277 that forces kids to be vaccinated by withholding the public benefit of schooling from them. There's a companion bill, 279, that requires all adults who have any contact with children professionally to also be
professionally fully or personally.
Or personally, all right. So all parents, you know,
parents, grandparents, bus drivers, taxi drivers.
Yeah, it's incremental, and so that's what people don't.
And
see,
if that doesn't scare you. And you obviously
we've been saying
enough fluoridated water.
Yeah, but I mean, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny had a good point. She said, "Can you think of one other industry on this planet that, if this was happening, it wouldn't be shut down immediately?" I mean, you look at the damage that vaccines do, and nothing gets done. I mean, look at product recalls. I mean, if some customer buys something from the supermarket and gets poisoned, I've seen it here just recently. They have to do a product recall the entire country. Over that, if a product out there is harming kids, there's an immediate investigation and they shut it down until they find out what's going on. But
not
this is the
so.
Not with vaccines.
Not so.
That's
the only I one. Love Sherry Tenpenny. I think she's a national and an international treasure. I disagree with her on this one, and I'll tell you why. If something that somebody doesn't have a huge financial interest in is causing harm in that way, then it will be shut down. But let's say that instead of, a baby car seat or something of that sort, let's say that we're talking about Ritalin, a drug. Let's say that we're talking about, cluster mines. Let's say that we're talking about drones. These things cause immense, incalculable harm, but they're very, very profitable, and they're part of a bigger profit picture. And so, like vaccines, they are assumed to be somehow good or safe or useful or productive or patriotic or some damn thing. And so then they're allowed, because now they're okay, because they fit into a larger picture. Only things that don't fit into the larger picture are stopped from being harmful to kids and to adults. And we have to take cognizance of the fact that this is no accident. This is not happening by somebody's oversight. These vaccines are designed to do specifically what they do, which is kill and maim and reduce fertility, and bring people into a state of dependence on the government to provide them with what they need, with care, with drugs, with resources, whatever. This is not an accident, folks. This is not just a bad pharmaceutical science run amok or gone awry. This is, in fact, part of a clear, intentional, genocidal agenda. You don't like that fact? Find something else that explains it. It's not the only product that kills and maims. Drugs kill more people in the United States, properly used drugs, than anything else.
And that's, by the way,
cardiovascular disease. That comes directly from the American Medical Association.
Now, it's really important to understand this, folks. Modern medicine is not about saving lives. It's not about it at all. And talking about that, we were talking earlier about all the people who were making all that money on the vaccine industry. We didn't add one more group, Dr. Rima, and that is the pediatricians.
Uh-huh.
In the United States, don't pediatricians make a big chunk of their money from vaccinations, vaccines that they are never personally responsible for, that are not figured into their medical malpractice insurance premium because vaccines are an uninsurable risk?
And in general, most pediatricians and most pediatric nurses and their families are not vaccinated. Why is that?
They're smart.
Yeah. Why would they want to do something that would hurt their families? Well, they want to do something that would hurt your family. Well, not my pediatrician. He's wonderful. Yeah, really? Somebody who would do something to your family that he wouldn't do to yours is wonderful? Or he's got a great bedside manner and a terrific act?
Very important points, Doc. Very, very important. You know?
If your doctor is not fully vaccinated, and if your doctor's family is not fully vaccinated, and your pediatrician is not fully vaccinated, run. On the other hand, if your doctor is fully vaccinated, run, because he's an idiot.
Yep.
Hey, by the way, Adam, did your prime minister ever get his daughter's vaccinated with Gardasil?
No, of course not. But I don't know if that's across the board, if it was just that one. But it may be all vaccines. Maybe they didn't get any. They wouldn't tell us. But I know it was that one. And that's an embarrassment for him because that's resurfaced, you know?
Good.
I mean, jeez. As I said, he didn't originally act on it. There was a lot of push and he got voted in and he didn't do anything and he wouldn't do anything. And these, as we stated before, the Murdoch press were pushing and pushing. They managed to get it through. So there's some powerful people at play here, you know, that are kind of telling the government and Mr. Abbott what to do and what not to do.
No.
I would say. Seems like that. But call me a conspiracy theorist, I guess.
Murdoch telling the government what to do on vaccines and other issues. Why, shades of Andrew Wakefield. Surely he would not do that again.
I think it's people are starting to see how much power Mr. Murdoch and his prestitutes have in this country. But there was a complete 360 turnaround all of a sudden after they wouldn't act on it. Something's happened almost overnight there where this has been rushed through. So powerful people.
Well, tell me what the status of this atrocity is at the moment.
Well, it's hard to. I've had a look on Facebook. We're going to ask Wendy this. She's ready to join us actually. And some people have mentioned that the laws haven't passed through the parliament yet. So I haven't been able to find out any information. So
is there a public register where the parliament is required to post new laws? I know in the United States, no federal law or regulation.
Yes, there is.
Binding.
There is, there is, and from what these people have said, it hasn't gone through yet. So it's sort of in limbo. So I'm trying to find out what's happening with that. Are people
That's what
still receiving
here in
benefits?
New Jersey,
I don't know.
You know, in New Jersey was one of the 27 states where bills were introduced to wipe out our religious exemptions. And, you know, they gave us each 90 seconds before the health committee to protest. I submitted my comments in writing as well, which was very interesting because they seemed to be interested in actually getting a more detailed statement. But that bill in our state has never come up for a vote. That was supposed to be up for a vote several weeks ago. Hundreds of people showed up on that day again, and it never got voted on. And as far as we can tell, they cannot cob together a majority. And hopefully that will be the case everywhere, including Australia and California and New Jersey and everywhere else. Maybe this push, which we've been suffering through for the past number of months since the measles outbreak, in California, maybe it will turn out to be just like the swine flu pandemic of 2009, mostly media hype and very little reality.
Adam, can we give our website so people can go to our site and stay abreast of what's going on with our newsletters and with our vaccine ebook, which is a 16-hour resource book that we would like to give people for free when they sign up for our newsletter and our information flow. May we give that website?
Of course. And are you going to stay with us, Dr. Rima?
Yes, or Ralph, I am.
With Wendy?
I am.
I can stay for a while, but it's kind of getting late here on the other side of the world.
Okay, so yes. Yeah, okay, so do that, and then I'll reestablish a contact.
www.drrimatruthreports. That's drrimatruthreports.com. I don't need to spell truth reports for you. You feel it in your heart when you're in the presence of truth. drrimatruthreports.com. And when you sign up, we'll send you the link to the 16-hour marathon vaccine truth program, plus lots of supplementary bonus material. Adam was part of that and gave a wonderful talk along with General Lee Maddox from the Australian perspective. It's something that you definitely want to have in your reference library. So that's Dr. Rima. truthreports.com.
Very good.
Okay, so that's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Okay.
You guys plugged in again?
Yep.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Wendy, you there?
Hi.
All good.
Yes, I'm using my daughter's phone instead of my computer.
Oh, it's okay. You couldn't. You could hear us, but there was a sound issue there.
Yes. I don't know why, because computers worked in the past. So
yeah.
Anyway,
I could hear a sort of fuzzing, sort of drone sound. So I knew that you were there, but you couldn't contact us. That's okay. You sound okay now.
Good.
Well, we are recording. We are recording, so you there, Dr. Rima?
I am.
And Ralph?
I am indeed here. It's a great pleasure.
We have just been doing a previous podcast show, Wendy, there, so with Dr. Rima and Ralph discussing the issues in regards to vaccines and people's rights to say no and all of this. And I wanted to bring you in for the next 40 minutes or whatever time you have to talk about yourself and talk about your great book. I haven't read it. Let us know about your material. But Ralph was just questioning me before about the marches coming up, about the new laws that have been brought in, stripping parents who don't vaccinate of their benefits. And I wasn't able to. I'm not sure if those have passed Parliament yet. I read on Facebook that they have not passed into official law yet. Do you know anything about that, Wendy?
Do you mean the laws? They're coming on the 1st of January. They're coming into
next
effect.
Year. Okay.
Yes.
So we have some time.
Have they actually been published as adopted by the Parliament?
I don't think they even need to do that. You know, this is democratic Australia. They can just make things by decree.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
And in any case, both the Labour Party and the Greens Party support the idea because they're also fascists.
Right, right. Yep.
You said it.
I understand that you have another party, another minor party, that claims to be in favor of liberty, and it's not willing to come out against forced vaccinations either.
That's called the Greens.
Yeah.
Okay. But there's another one, Liberal Democrat Party.
It's very small, and
very small.
It doesn't really feature in Parliament.
Got it.
Yeah, there's only two really big powers here, Ralph. It's the Liberals and the Labour, and they both are in total agreement with each other there.
Gee, it sounds like the United States.
Yeah, but it's
worse here. The Democrats and Republicans when it comes to these types of issues.
Yeah, we call them opposames.
Yes, apophthegms, indeed.
That's the word for him. But, well, I guess, Wendy, introduce yourself. Tell us about yourself a little bit, if you may. It's great to speak with you. It's good you're here.
Yes, sorry about the problems. Well, I was born in South Africa a long time ago. And at that time, when my children were born, South Africa was still a police state, and vaccination was actually compulsory. And there was no way I was going to vaccinate. So I thought, oh, well, if they're going to put me in jail, I need to have some facts and figures at hand to, present, to argue my case. And I started looking for facts and figures. And I was amazed to discover that vaccines have been practiced for 200 years without the collection of facts and figures. So then I started reading old medical journals, and what I discovered was so shocking that I decided I needed to share the information with other people, which is why I wrote the book.
Ah, and the book is called Bringing Up...
Raising a Vaccine-Free Child.
Vaccine-Free Child, yeah, yes. That's, yes. And that's that's up on Amazon. And is that on Kindle, or is it just the book?
No, it's just in a paper book.
Okay, so how did you go about writing that, and when was it written?
It was written from 1984 to about 2005, because I had young children to look after at the same time. So getting to libraries and looking at medical journals and all that was secondary to looking after my children and my family. And I learned a lot of things. Amazingly, I learned that those diseases that used to be called the childhood diseases, like measles, mumps, rubella, and chickenpox, they're actually beneficial diseases if they're handled properly while the child has them. And there's quite a lot of published research in medical journals showing that they benefit a person in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, this looks like a great book. I've got up now. It's Raising a Vaccine-Free Child. And your last name, Wendy, how is that pronounced? Lydell or Laydell?
Lydell.
Lydell, Wendy Lydell. Yeah, fully referenced, yes. Forwarded by Dr. Mike Godfrey. And people can get that. I'm going to put that link up accompanying this podcast today.
Actually, you're in Australia, aren't you?
Yes, I'm in Sydney.
Because people in Australia can buy it directly. Rather put up the website Vaccine Free Child.
That's great.
Oh.
Yeah.
.com. Vaccinefreechild.com.
Okay. Yeah, I've got that. And
because if any people in overseas do come to that, there's a link to Amazon so they can get it from Amazon. But they have a choice getting it from Australia, New Zealand, or Amazon.
And I like it here. It's talking about parents who need to cope with aggression from individuals and with intimidation from the medical authorities, you know, as well, all on this herd immunity. They keep pushing and pushing. I don't need to tell you, Wendy, you're here, how brutal our mainstream media, our Murdoch mainstream media are in the fear campaign, pushing vaccines. They're utterly just spreading of these vicious lies and fear and spooking the population into getting these laws through, which is really disgusting. So it's good that you've done this book, and I think people will need to go out and have a read of this. And I guess in the book you also give guidelines to parents on how to bring up a child that's vaccine-free. Do you offer sort of guidelines in diet and nutrition and these types of things?
Only with regards to polio, because that's the one that you can catch if you've been eating nothing but sugar for a few days and a polio virus comes along, then, you know, you're in trouble. But on diseases like measles and mumps and rubella and chickenpox, diet makes absolutely no difference to whether you catch it or not. But it does make a difference to how well you handle it when you get it. And most Western children who sort of eat enough calories, they will handle it okay as long as they're not chilled, as doctors and nurses tell parents to do, and as long as they're not given drugs to suppress fever, which is an extremely dangerous thing that all doctors and nurses are taught to do by the drug companies when they're doing their training. And where it becomes a problem, diet, is when a child has severe kwashiorkor or marasmus, you know, like really starving. Like in some parts of Africa and some parts of Asia, you get very poor children who have very little food. And when they get measles, then it's dangerous.
Yeah, that lower immune system.
They don't even produce a fever. When they get measles, they get the infection, and their immune systems are so damaged by malnutrition that they can't produce a fever, and they die.
Yeah, it's, Dr. Rima, your opinion on this? I mean, I, growing up, and all my brothers, everyone I know had chicken pox and measles, mumps. My brother had mumps, and we're all healthy. When we used to come home with chicken pox, my dad would just say, you know, put some cream on it, put some tea tree on it, not a big deal. The media, through the drug companies, obviously now pushing this so much, that making it into such a big deal that it's like this life-threatening, deadly thing that everyone needs to panic about. Dr. Rima, what's your opinion on this, on the vaccines that kids are getting? Is it, I mean, obviously it's compounding the problems.
It is designed to compound the problems. Yeah. There is nothing benign about the pharmaceutical approach to illness. There is and you have to sort of put out of your mind the fact that you may or may not like the doctor that you or your children go to. It's kind of like liking the oncologist that you go to if you have cancer and you're foolish enough to take chemotherapy. It doesn't matter whether you like them or not. They have been brainwashed. Either they are unconscious or they are conscious of the fact that they are brainwashed into doing things that are very bad for you and very bad for their children. And the level of their consciousness is the level to which they themselves diverge from what they tell you that you should do for yourself or your child. So some of them are just useful idiots, and they really don't know better. And some of them do know better, but they're despicable useful idiots. If a doctor is telling you to suppress a fever, then the doctor is either a fool or duplicitous. In either case, you don't want that doctor taking care of you or your child. If a doctor is coming at you with a syringe or deputizing his or her nurse to come at you with a syringe, that doctor is either a fool or duplicitous, and you don't want that doctor taking care of you. Now, let me point out that when doctors go on strike in any place in the world, death rates fall. When doctors can't see patients, death rates fall. Doctors can't write prescriptions when they're not seeing patients or doing telemedicine. Death rates fall. There's a reason for that, and the reason is that the interventions are deadly, like suppressing fevers with aspirin, paracetamol, ibuprofen, etc. Deadly, absolutely deadly. So what Wendy is saying, I'm sitting here nodding my head vigorously in admiration for and agreement with. She's absolutely correct in everything I've heard her say so far. Good for you, Wendy. Thank you for saying it. And thank you for writing that book.
I won't say it was a pleasure, because it was very, very hard. It was so hard to sift out the lies from the truth and find the facts and find out what's important. When I first wrote it, it was 10 times as long as it is now, and I had to decide what was the most important information for someone who's just had a baby or who has had a child and is deciding to stop vaccinating. What is the most important information that they need?
Tell us a little bit about that, Wendy. Tell us a little bit about what because I've had a lot of contacts on our Facebook page from young mothers who are about to give birth or have a very young baby. What would sort of advice would you give some of these people? Some of them absolutely will not touch vaccines.
Yes.
Like myself, I'll go to Antarctica to live before I get that stuff into my body. But some people, they're a little bit on the fence and they're a little bit shaky about what's going on and they don't trust it. What would you tell them?
It's understandable, because they have been primed to feel terrible fear of measles and chickenpox and those sort of diseases. So it's natural that they would feel fearful. So they're afraid of the vaccines and they're afraid of the diseases. So the thing that does away with fear is knowledge. And when people know about the diseases and what they do, Interestingly, measles were studied quite a lot during the 1950s, but that stopped as soon as the vaccine was invented. All the research into what measles actually does came to a dead stop as soon as there was a vaccine. And as you mentioned earlier, there's not only the problem of dealing with the diseases, there's also the problem of dealing with the people who are trying to bully you and, you know, all the fear factors and all of that.
Yes.
So once you know the statistics and, you know, and I've found what statistics there are, for instance, with fevers, they say fever is such a bad thing because it causes convulsions. Well, 4% of children are prone to having a convulsion with fever. And when they do have convulsions, it does not cause brain damage. And that is official. It's been studied. It's been spread around through the medical, you know, various medical things. But parents still believe that a fever is dangerous because the child will have a convulsion and get brain damage from it.
Yeah.
When it doesn't happen.
Oh, that's been happening with the flu shots.
They can get the convulsion, but it won't. If they do, it won't cause brain damage.
No, but they're spooking people, aren't they?
Yes, that's the idea, is to make people fearful. Mm. And then the big pharma makes more money out of selling drugs that suppress fever than it does out of vaccines, like ibuprofen and paracetamol.
Yeah.
And they used to use aspirin, but that's become unfashionable now.
Yeah, people gobble them like lollies, don't they?
Yes, and the big pharma makes more money out of those than out of vaccines. So, of course, they want people to suppress fevers because that's, you know, big money spinner.
Yeah, that's your body naturally burning off these fevers and things. It's a natural way. I mean, I got a little bit of a flu sort of virus about a month ago, and I was burning up. I mean, I was like an open fire, and it was gone, like, pretty much the next morning, you know?
It's actually quite a sophisticated process. The body is amazing and what a fever does. It's absolutely amazing. And I've done a whole chapter on what fever does and why it's good.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I would honestly assume, and I get Dr. Arima's opinion on this and yours and Ralph as well, because as I said, when I was little, we had all these things. And I would assume that after you've had the chicken pox and the measles and the mumps, It sets your immune system up for the rest of your life. And
A recent study has come out which shows that people who have had chickenpox have a much lower rate of the most common type of malignant brain tumor than people who have not had chickenpox.
So what would it be here, Dr. Rima, when you're given these vaccines against chickenpox and the measles and the mumps, and say you're a kid and you don't get it? What does that do to this child later on in their life in regards to their immune systems?
Well, the viruses that we've been taught to fear and to loathe are actually part of the stimulation system that primes and educates our immune system. There is very good reason to have viruses. There are about 10,000 viruses that we know of, by the way, and there are probably lots more, but there are about 10,000 viruses that we live in happy harmony with. We don't get sick from, but they do keep our immune system humming, the same as the bacteria in our gut, on our skin, etc. We need these challenges on an ongoing basis. And so some of these challenges, measles, mumps, some of these challenges are ones that we actively need in order to tune our immune system. And in the same way that the children who have had the MMR vaccine very often wind up with the measles virus, the artificially changed measles virus in their gut, and it causes terrible problems, and in their brain, and it causes terrible problems. In the same way, the normal community-acquired, ungenetically tampered with measles vaccine seems to prevent the presence of it, and the antibodies to it seem to prevent a whole range of cancers, breast cancers, prostate cancers, etc., chicken pox, community-acquired infection, normal kids picking up the disease kind of infection, seems to prevent brain tumors, as Wendy, certain kinds of brain tumors, as Wendy said. Cancer used to be a rare disease for a very good reason. We had immune systems that knew how to deal with organisms and were strong and robust, so that when a cancer cell showed up, and on average about 10,000 of them do every day in an ordinary human being's body. So when these cells showed up, the immune system said, yeah, right, I'm prepared for this. Here we go, guys. And would simply meet the challenge, get rid of the immune distortion that caused the cancer to show up, and then would learn from it. Now, one of the things that people do, surgeons, for instance, do when treating cancer, is they'll take out the lymph nodes. If a woman has breast cancer or a man has prostate cancer, they'll take out the lymph nodes, when in fact what they should be doing is thanking the lymph nodes and giving them the nutrients and the energetic information that they need in order to do precisely what they're doing, which is trapping the cancer cells, learning what the cancer covering looks and smells like, and then going after it. So when you find cancer cells in a lymph node, it's an indication that the lymph node is doing its job. It's trapping and learning from the cancer cells. And then you have to support the lymph node, not chop it out. It's the same thing with killing the fever response that the body is mounting specifically to protect you and to educate the immune system against this particular threat. It makes no medical sense, but then it doesn't have to in order to be medicine, does it?
It's amazing. You were talking as well, Dr. Emer, on one of our last shows about vitamin A and whooping cough, that doctors don't know about this, prescribing that. That's very important, I guess, vitamin
Absolutely.
C as well, but vitamin A I wasn't sure about. That was very interesting.
Yes, and there's something else, and I'm sure Wendy and Ralph and you are all aware of this, and that is that whooping cough is not a dangerous disease in a community situation, that is to say a non-vaccine spread situation, because babies don't get whooping cough. But when the vaccine comes into play, it changes the actual organism, and then school-age children don't get it, babies get it, adults get it, and then it's really dangerous. So even if a baby has, or if an adult has whooping cough, vitamin A and vitamin C make it a trivial disease again. Hello? Why aren't we doing this? Why isn't this normal procedure? Well, the answer is because health is not the province of medicine. Drugs and illness management, illness creation and illness management are the real province of medicine. That's why doctors don't know. It's not real hard to tell them.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But here in the United States, recently the health committee of the Maine state senate would not consider a bill that would require doctors to read the vaccine insert to the patients or the patients' parents before getting a shot. If people knew what was in them,
indeed,
why they wouldn't do it?
Indeed, what they did in the state of Maine was make it legal for doctors not to inform patients about vaccine danger. So what they did was memorialize the lack of informed consent. Well done, gentlemen, well, and ladies, well done. Medical Tyranny on the March.
Oh, yeah. Actually, Ralph would know about this. There was another bill, Dr. Reamer and Wendy, LD471, which came out. This is a bill to fight vaccine misinformation, and it's cleared over there. And they're saying this bill's designed to ensure parents have reliable, accurate information before deciding not to have their children vaccinated. And if you look through this, Ralph, it sort of looks a bit like Chinese, what the Chinese are doing, where they're just going to shelve any sort of vaccine information that doesn't suit their agenda. And you will only be able to get vaccine information that suits their agenda. You know what I mean? This is the bill, LD471, Ralph. It looks quite shocking, and that's from Maine as well.
Right, exactly. What's going on here is that the groups of people that depend on the vaccine industry for their filthy lucre are beginning to realize that they've lost the moral ground. The moral high ground, they've lost the legal high ground, and they've really lost science. And they're getting desperate. All they have left is the law, which they control. And science, and, you know, when governments or legal authorities start deciding what the science is, you know, we get Galileo being put under house arrest for his life. We get Stalin and the bizarre theories of Lysenko. We get the vaccination brand.
I want to make the point that political science is settled. Once the science is settled, we're talking about fascism. There can be no settled science. I made the point in the earlier podcast, Adam. Science unsettles. Politics settles science. There is no settled science unless it's pseudoscience.
Yes, and it's unbelievable, Wendy. I guess you're really seeing this in Australia, this media push, absolutely biased, even on the mainstream TV shows and mainstream news.
Mm.
I watched a TV show on Channel 10 here, Dr. Reamer, called The Project, and they supposedly had an open vaccine discussion about these new laws that are coming in. And they didn't have someone on there to argue it or someone that has their own opinion. They had someone from the Telegraph on there. And they were actually saying, you know, they should go further. Should children be allowed to ride on buses? Should children allowed to be go to school? Are children a threat if they're unvaccinated to our Australian society? So we're seeing this, aren't we, Wendy, in Australia? I've never seen anything like this. It's such a vicious smear campaign, treating parents like criminals and treating their children like lepers. It's discrimination against kids who have done nothing wrong. And people don't see what's wrong with this. It's absolutely disgusting. And we got started here with the Rupert Murdoch Daily Telegraph article by Claire Harvey. Dr. Reamer knows this too well, where she came out and called parents who don't vaccinate terrorists and baby killers.
Yes.
And this is what sort of led to all of this mess. But absolutely remarkable. What's your opinions on what's going on in this country? I mean, the utter fear-mongering is ridiculous.
There's an ancient quote from Tacitus. The more corrupt the state, the more numerous the laws.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed.
And that's what you're seeing. You're seeing the last gasp, if you will.
Go on, Wendy.
What it is important to know about Australia is that 70% of the media is controlled by Rupert Murdoch.
Yes.
And Rupert Murdoch has billions invested in drugs and vaccines. And most of the rest of the media is controlled by Fairfax, and I don't know what their financial connections are, but they certainly won't allow any factual reporting about vaccines. And that program that you mentioned called The Project, they actually announced that they would never allow anyone who is against vaccines to appear on their program.
Yeah, they just bring in Ray Hadley, the loudmouth Sydney shock jock, every time they have they blast fluoride in the drinking water or vaccines or one of these things, and they bring him on. But as I just said, yeah, they bring on people from the Telegraph. It's so biased. It's to say it's biased is not enough. I don't know what it is. It's absolutely disgusting to be in Australia
watching this. I think the word is totalitarian.
It really
is, Dr.
Reamer.
That goes well beyond bias.
Yeah,
this is massively total. And it's totalitarianism incredible. Is beyond right and beyond left. I personally am proud to tell you that not only am I banned by the Daily and Sunday Telegraph in Australia and by This Week in Kamloops, British Columbia, which that strikes me as pretty odd because that can't be a major paper, but there I am, banned. I'm also banned by the left-leaning, progressive, liberal Guardian in the UK for exactly the same reason. The Guardian said the science is settled and that people who question, not even anti, forget anti, people who question vaccines should not be given public fora space. And therefore, true to their word, they banned me from any kind of communication in their sacred precinct, so to speak. I find that extraordinary. It's right, it's left, it's center, which I think is a pretty good indication that those designations are very, very antiquated and mean nothing any longer. This is a put-up job by something that is deeper than right, deeper than left, and deeper than any individual partisan worldview. And I think that's important to note. This is not just a battle for your vaccine status. This is a battle for your life because these forces have another agenda. And Ralph was referring to it earlier in the previous podcast, Adam. That agenda is to reduce the population of the planet according to their words and their writings by 90%. They say that 90% of us are useless eaters. And as useless eaters, we have no place on the planet. And therefore, they have a whole series of stratagems, of which vaccination is but one, for accomplishing their end goal.
Who are these people?
Well, they have names like the World Health Organization, definitely not your friend, a private corporation funded at least two-thirds by the pharmaceutical industry, the United Nations, which has expressed in its millennial goals and Agenda 21 the desire to reduce the population by 90% or more and to compress the remaining 10% of the population onto 1% of the landmass of the planet, giving the rest of it back to the wild creatures and rewilding the planet. And no human being will be allowed to go onto that other 90%, to which my response is, you want to bet? You think the oligarchs are not going to mine and ski and have fun and so on? They'll do whatever they like, of course. These people are the Club of Rome. They are the Global Strategic Health Initiative, a private-public partnership of which Ralph was speaking earlier. They are the Council on Foreign Relations. They are the United States government, which adopted in 1974 a dogma, a doctrine of global depopulation, authored by Henry Kissinger in something called National Security Memorandum 200, which says quite clearly depopulation is to begin in the third world and outlines exactly where and how. So these people have not been hiding. It's that we are not crazy enough to give credit to what they are crazy enough to make public. But they're quite serious about
it. Nice people, Wendy.
Now, some people jump all over the Natural Solutions Foundation, typically moms. Well, I agree with what you're saying, but I don't agree with the fact that you're using the language of war and I won't allow my children to talk about war, point their fingers at each other as if they had a gun or play cowboys and Indians. And you should find some less aggressive language, to which I respond, you know what? You're probably right. Help me out here, because it seems to me that if somebody wants you and your children dead without ever having met them, without knowing anything at all about them, I would say that sort of feels like a war to me. What would you call it? And they never write back. It is a war. It is a war. They want us dead.
What's your thoughts on this, Wendy? What do you think about this?
I think they might. That might be their wish, but they certainly won't succeed. There always has been...
Absolutely, you're right about it.
There always has been a minority of people who have used their brains and not just accepted the myths about vaccination since the day that Edward Jenner started doing vaccination. That has been the case. And there's always been the majority who just go along with it without thinking until their child suffers a severe adverse reaction. Then they suddenly go, oh, whoops. And I think something to bring it back to the issue of the law changes that are happening in Australia. If a family has a child who has been severely damaged by a vaccine, and that child has a permanent disability and is getting family tax benefit A, and the family stopped vaccinating that child after it had the bad reaction, they're not going to be able to get that benefit anymore, that welfare benefit anymore. And in theory, what they can do is take the child along to a doctor and get the doctor to sign a medical exemption form. But they'd have quite a problem in Australia finding a doctor who's willing to sign a medical exemption form, because doctors suffer from a sort of pathological denial when they see a case of vaccine reaction.
Yeah.
And they say something like, oh, no, it couldn't have been the vaccine that caused that. It must have been something else that happened at the same time. It's just a coincidence.
Little Timmy's so had these too much sun.
These people are not going to – no, I'm talking about severely damaged children who need permanent care and whom the government – pays some welfare for. Now, that's going to stop. Not all welfare is going to stop, but this one particular thing called Family Tax Benefit A is going to stop unless that child gets all of the other, well, there were 38 vaccines that they're supposed to have before their fifth birthday. And if you only have 37 of the 38, you don't get the money.
So you're talking about severely brain-damaged children, for example, that are cared for at home.
Yes.
That need that for life. They're going to take the money away that the parents get to care for those kids unless they've had more vaccines.
Yes. Mm.
This is unbelievable, Ralph. Unbelievable stuff, really, isn't it, Wendy? That is just incredible. I mean, what does that tell us, Wendy? I mean, it's phenomenal. I mean, kids that have been brain damaged for life from these damn vaccines, and then they're forced to get more, otherwise they don't get benefits to care for their kids.
But the way they will couch it is it wasn't the vaccine that caused the damage.
Of course, yeah.
We know that because of the science.
Unbelievable. I mean,
meanwhile, there is no science supporting that idea.
Oh, this is sick. It really is. I mean,
it
shows you that there's no, I mean, how low can they go? That's the question you ask, and they just keep going lower.
They're not
and lower.
As low as they can go.
Yeah, that's the scary thing.
They
Dr.
will
Ren.
Go lower.
I mean,
unless we stop them, which is what you're doing, Adam, which is what you're doing, Wendy, which is what we're doing at the Natural Solutions Foundation. And you're quite right. There have always been people who wanted to engage in these atrocities against the rest of us. And there have always been those of us who said, don't you dare. And so we continue.
Yeah, but, I mean, Wendy knows only too well. I mean, if we allow this to go through, that's what people keep these I don't know what they are, Wendy, on social media, trolls, whatever you want to call them, pro-vaxxers, they're entitled to their opinion, fine. But a lot of them are saying, you know, what are you worrying about, you know? I mean, if you believe in not vaccinating so much, the money shouldn't matter. This is a ridiculous statement because you're getting your money, aren't you? You know, they're getting their money so they're happy. You know, people who are working and paying taxes and have a family, they're entitled to that. as well. But what they don't understand is that this goes through, it's incremental, it's going to get worse. This is just the start of it. I'm telling people this.
What is happening now is the thin edge of the wedge, and it's going to get wider and wider and push open the door completely.
Yes.
As a parent who has not vaccinated your children, I think you mentioned plural children. Yes. What have you experienced personally?
I've experienced measles, mumps, rubella, chicken pox, whooping cough, roseola. No mumps. Mistake there. Unfortunately, my children have not had mumps. None of them. When there was an outbreak of mumps among vaccinated children of their age, and they played with them, and they didn't get mumps from the vaccinated children who had mumps.
Damn that immune system.
So
maybe the other diseases were enough.
my question is, as a parent, have you been, have attempts been made to intimidate you or to compel you?
Oh, yes. But I grew up in a police state, so I'm not scared of these little tin pot dictators.
Ah, how very interesting. You did. Yes, you mentioned that you were in South Africa when it was a police state.
Yes.
And that prepared you to deal with intimidation.
Yes.
That's kind of like having viruses in your environment preparing you to deal with more viruses and more bacteria, isn't it?
Yeah. We are the world around us, aren't we? We're all the same thing merged into one. It's amazing. This gets the human beings back up, Dr. Emma. That's what a lot of people have lost sitting in front of the TV. They've lost that will to survive, to fight, to say no. You know, it's my body. I'm not taking that. They're just like, whatever. You know, and it's not a way to be.
Well, that's fluoride. Yeah, do you have digital TV or do you still have analog TV in Australia?
Digital.
Okay. And was there a sudden push one day?
Yes.
Analog TV was perfectly okay, and then everybody had to have digital TV?
Yep.
Well, let me tell you about some experiments that we did in the United States with the digital TV. Now, I don't have a TV in my home. I would not have a TV. I don't want a TV for many reasons, but I had a feeling. I deal with frequencies, as does Ralph, in a very intensive way. I use them in my practice. I understand a fair amount about them. And I had a suspicion that the TV was not just an entertainment form, that the TV was part of the control system. So I asked a scientist whom Ralph and I both know, who has oscilloscopes and deals with frequency as well, to do some studies on the TV in her home because she has a digital TV. And what she did was she did a voice analysis. That's a recording, and then the voice is fed through a fast Fourier transform, a computer program that breaks the frequencies, the complex frequency, into its individual components. Very interesting. And so she took voice recordings of her husband, her grandchild, the grandchild's mother, and another one or two people before they watched an hour of TV and after they watched an hour of TV. And she also took recordings of the actual TV sound. And what was coming out and what was embedded in the voice of these people were frequencies that can trigger diabetes, cancer, and docile behavior, docile behavior. You sure you want to turn that thing on?
That's incredible technology inbuilt into these things that people don't understand. That's unbelievable. Yeah, I've seen this stuff as well, Dr. Emma. Unbelievable, isn't it? That is incredible stuff. There you go. That tells you about the push and how quickly they put it onto us when there was nothing wrong with analog, you know?
Absolutely.
Jeez, might throw it out the window. What do you reckon?
I would. I wouldn't keep it in my house. And if you do insist on having it in your house, keep it unplugged unless you're actually using it, because it also can emit when it's not plugged in. I mean, when it's not turned on, when you're not watching a show.
God damn. What do you think about that, Wendy?
I would need to see the stance on it. I can't offer an opinion unless I've studied something.
I'm not familiar with it really either. I've heard some stuff on it. Mm-hmm. I've heard Dr. Emma talk about it, but I've heard some other shows on it as well, Dr. Emma, this new technology in there. Yeah, I do enjoy a good documentary and a film every now and then. I guess it's not the same with the computer screen, though, Doc, as well. It'd be these new
apparently not.
Yeah,
but,
new
you
TVs.
Know, just unplug the sucker when you're not using it.
That's not a hard thing to do, is it?
No, not really.
Yeah, I guess people are so used to having them around as well. So, you know, it's a shame. Some kids spend all day on them and then with the video games and everything. And as we just said before, they seem to lose that, don't they, Wendy? I've noticed that in the city environment as well, that a lot of young people have lost that will sort of almost to survive. And my wife and I work with children, and I can see it for myself, and I see the pressure. We have a family daycare, and we look after some little ones, and some of them aren't vaccinated and are getting really bullied and pushed around, but they continue to push through. But I can see these kids are different. They hardly ever get sick, and I can see the other kids with the runny noses constantly all year and producing so much phlegm. And some of them, the babies as well, have had reactions. I haven't been able to find out what they were. Unbelievable, they're getting hepatitis B vaccines within the first 24 hours of birth. But also on the baby formula and all this, you get the blotches and the rashes and the unhealthy sort of look and the coughs and the colds all year. And that general sort of look to them that you know that they've got a compromised immune system as well as diet and these types of things. And we've talked about this before. It's so incredible that particularly in Sydney, all these mums, they're running and jogging and exercising, and they're paranoid about the BPA and the plastics, and they're using the organic nappies, and they're worried about the food, and they love the healthy diet and everything like that, which is fine, but they'll go down without question and get their kids jabbed with their latest vaccines, which is an astonishing sort of place to be in your lifetime, don't you think that?
Never, never underestimate the power of fluoride.
It's amazing. I really find that amazing. People really seem to want to be healthy, and I'm not accusing anyone of anything, Wendy. Parents love their kids. They love them to death, and they would do anything for them. Of course they would. But there's this whole thing where they want to protect and keep their children safe and free of disease and healthy, and then this ghastly sort of shadowy presence there in the background that these people will hand their babies over to a doctor with a deadly weapon, you know, and allow it to go into their kid's body without even questioning, hey, hang on a sec, what's that going into my kid's bodies, doctor? Can you show me? Can you prove to me that that's not a kind of, you know, give my child a reaction of any type, you know? It's an amazing that people have so much trust in the medical establishment, and we have on the line Dr. Rima, who's a doctor, who would rather jump out the window than have a vaccine put in her own arm.
Who has absolutely no trust in the medical establishment for a couple of reasons. One is because I'm in it.
It's amazing.
And I know what it is. And I've seen it, and the brainwashing didn't work on me because I guess I'm just aberrant. But the point is, when you understand exactly what's going on, the last thing you would do is exercise trust in something that is so untrustworthy.
Even if you read some articles, you wouldn't do it. Even if I read a couple of articles, I'd be like, hang on, step back, let me have a think here. You know? I mean, you wouldn't take your newborn baby to go through that, even if there was that little tiny, tiny little part of your brain that was thinking, don't do it, check it. But they don't. They don't check.
One of the things that the parents of vaccinated children do is when their child gets the disease that they were vaccinated against, they say, oh, it would have been much worse if the child hadn't been vaccinated. And that's not true. When you look at the science, you find that atypical measles is actually worse than classical measles, and so on.
Exactly. And the polio delivered by the polio vaccine is twice as deadly as polio acquired in the community, and a great deal more common. I delivered a paper in February, an invitational paper in at a conference on medical education, and I pointed out that in the 13 months before India was declared a polio-free zone, which of course it has never been, the vaccine induced over 53,000 cases of polio, which was twice as deadly and which left children in far worse straits if they survived than the community acquired polio. So that community acquired polio was found in about 2 out of 100,000 children, whereas in vaccinated children, it was found in 34 out of 100,000 children. Excuse me? What?
It's unbelievable. Did you get that document I just sent through to you and Ralph Docurima about the FTC? This is a new one, Wendy. It's unbelievable. In the United States, the Federal Trade Commission has accused 4 cancer charities of defrauding well-meaning donors for over $187 million. So this is the Cancer Fund of America, Cancer Support Services, and
The Federal Trade Commission.
Children Cancer Fund of America and Breast Cancer Society. I bring this up because, as you said, Wendy, these parents vaccinate their kids. Generally, you know, they might survive the first rounds, but I find they get to a target age, you know, sort of 3 to 5. They come down with blood cancers, like leukemia is very common. Our children's hospitals in Sydney are full. And, you know, we've got the Ronald McDonald House, you know. You buy our hamburgers and we'll give your sick children a cot to lie on. That's their motto. And every time I turn around and turn on the TV, read a magazine, open the papers, they're having Cancer Foundation charities and Shave Your Head, the biggest morning tea. And all the parents, they get involved in it, Wendy. If you were to go in there and try and discuss anything with them, you're so insensitive, you know, because, you know, you're questioning these cancer foundations. And here they are ripping people off for $187 million. It's amazing, isn't it?
Well, actually, it's very little when you consider what the cancer industry rips people off for in dollars and in their lives.
Yeah. Wendy, what do you think?
One of the ironies of the whole childhood cancer situations is that I've gone blank. I had it in my head.
The cancer charities for the children?
No, not about the charities. About the children who are getting cancer. One of the ironies about that is that the huge number of children who are getting cancer these days are being used by the vaccine industry to drum up hatred against parents who don't vaccinate, because they say, and it's true, that a child who has cancer is in danger from chickenpox. Chickenpox is very bad in someone who has cancer. You know, there's a high risk of death if you have cancer and then you get chickenpox. So what they're saying is that all the vaccine-free children all around are a threat to all the children with cancer. But what they should be doing is doing some studies to find out why so many children have cancer these days.
Yeah, they don't look at the bigger picture, do they? It's just cancer blows in the wind. It's just kids get it.
Well, they actually know why so many children have cancer. They don't have to do too many studies because they understand full well that the children have cancer because of the vaccines and the contamination in the vaccines with the well-known SV40 and with many, many, many other cancer-causing viruses. They know that children are getting cancer because of the glyphosate in their food from the genetically modified foods and the other pesticides and herbicides that are used. It's no real mystery why children are getting cancer. And kind of the last thing they want to do is find out why.
Yeah.
Why would they do that?
Yeah, exactly. And the GMO food is attacking the our immune systems and us in our stomach lining, our beneficial gut bacteria, and that's going to have a devastating effect.
It's also attacking our own genetics.
Yeah, our whole makeup.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, it's a real worry for young kids being brought up on this GMO food today. Because what type of immune system will they have? And they're being vaccinated against everything. It's a real crying shame. But as Wendy said, the demonization is incredible, isn't it, Wendy? I saw a story, I put it up, I don't have it in front of me, unfortunately, Dr. Rima, but it was another Telegraph story. And Wendy, they demonized a lady who owned a childcare center up near Byron Bay. Because on her Facebook page, she just simply said that she doesn't really agree with vaccines. And the Telegraph picked it up and splashed it all over their papers and demonized her, you know. And she actually said that all the kids in her classes, in her childcare center, who were vaccinated against whooping cough, they all got it. And she's had some bad times with that. And she said the only kids that fared better were the ones on homeopathic vaccinations. Interesting. But it shows you how low they will go in these Murdoch newspapers. They'll just demonize anyone they can. But you've noticed as well, Wendy, have you seen any of these newspapers or news reports offer up one shred of information in regards to what they're saying? I have not seen anything. They're just demonizing and fear-mongering.
No, they don't. Yes. Well, that's what they're there for. And the people who work for Rupert Murdoch know that they work for Rupert Murdoch, and they're not going to say anything that threatens their job. So...
Yeah, take your check, eh?
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, you sounded so outraged. Do you really expect journalism from these people?
Prestitutes, we call them.
Yes,
prestitutes.
Yes.
It's a perfect name for them.
Indeed. Except it is unfair and demeaning to sex workers, you have to admit.
Yes. And, okay, Wendy, you have to plug out quite soon.
Do I?
Is that what you said, or is that Ralph?
No.
I think that was Ralph.
Okay, Ralph's plugged out. He's in New York, isn't he, Dr. Rima?
In New Jersey.
In New Jersey. It's quite late for him. How much time do we have with you, Wendy?
Another 2 hours.
Okay. Well, well, we don't need to do that. We'll finish up maybe in about another half an hour, a bit less here. Wendy, why don't we talk a little bit about the upcoming marches in happening around Australia on the 21st of June. I've been involved with the great help of Dr. Rima and Ralph. They have drawn up some great stuff for us, including an email that people can just click on and it sends a message directly to Tony Abbott. So many great things they've been helping us with and with general information. We were just talking when we started about these sites. It's a little bit of a difficult process going on here because you're getting a lot of trolls on the sites that are bullying people and all this. So I've been going on there to kind of get them off and try and Dr. Rima drew up a debate page. So we have directly asked anybody to come on to this program with Dr. Rima and Ralph and debate us on the safety, you know, the effectiveness of vaccines and also herd immunity, these types of things. And I've sent it to the Greens, the MPs, the health ministers, and we've got polite no's back every time. Some of these bullies on the pages have been really bullying even pregnant women. And I've said, look, get off the page. This is a protest page on Facebook for people to get involved in the days so they can go along and come on and talk to us about your issues because you seem really passionate, and they won't do it. So it's a little bit of a problem on there for the organisers on Facebook who are doing this. So tell us how you're going with this process and where you where will you be having your rallies? And let us know a little bit about this.
Well, there are actually so far 6 rallies planned. Sydney, Melbourne, Perth, Adelaide, Canberra, and Brisbane. We're hoping that Hobart and Darwin are going to come on board as well, but that hasn't happened yet. And on Facebook, they've put up a warning about beware of angry people who might try to be violent towards you, and warning you that the protesters that they must not respond with violence, because then that would, you know, upscale the level of aggression from the pro-vaxxers. So it's something you have to be careful about, because there are some very angry people out there.
I know.
Not quite sane, angry people who are very pro-vaccination and very angry against people who don't believe in the same religion as they do. So that's one of the issues.
It's a religion too.
Oh, it's absolutely. It's not a science. It's a religion.
We just want to preserve our rights. I mean, I don't care if they vaccinate, but these people are vicious. I mean, it is an absolute religion. I've never seen anything like it.
They say, "I believe in vaccination." That's the terminology they use. They believe. Not, "I have studied the facts and I know what I'm talking about," but "I believe in vaccination."
I wonder who some of them are, actually. I talked to Dr. Rima about this. They may work directly for drug companies, or we know, Wendy, we've done some research on this, where they actually have rooms of people and people who are paid to just go online all day and discredit and bust up sites and information and put in their own views. For whoever they're working for. So some of them, we don't really know who they are, because they don't seem to care either way. They just seem to be causing trouble. So they could work for anybody. Who knows?
Yes, I think there are some of those, but there are also a huge army of unpaid vigilantes who see it as their role in life to attack people who don't believe in vaccination, and they're not being paid, but they spend hours and hours and hours on the internet.
Oh, we can't counteract them. I don't have the time, you know?
Yes, well... the way I see it is that I'm only put my energy into people who want to know the facts and who are looking for information genuinely, and I don't bother about those people.
Yes, yeah, Dr. Rima's dealt with
them
as well.
And I think that's very wise.
Dr. Rima got a rude shock, Wendy, because when that original Telegraph article went up accusing parents of being killers, this was a dreadful display. And we went on there, and Dr. Rima put up a response. And because all these trolls were on the Telegraph site, and they're still on there now, and they keep going on there until they push everybody off and retain their top of the pecking order. And we went on there, and Dr. Rima put this paper up. I pasted it up there, and it just was like smashing a beehive. And they went crazy, and we battled them for about 3 hours. But mostly they thinned out and went away, but they were very vicious. And what happened is Dr. Rima got banned. I got banned. They took down everything that we wrote. And other people who were just concerned, who were putting up some comments, had their comments taken down eventually as well. So it was just, it was so biased and ridiculous, we just gave up on them. And that's the Murdoch Press. They wouldn't let us have our say either. So it was really disgusting what they did. And then, of course, they put up a fake poll on their paper that 86% of Australians want... want forced vaccinations for our children, and then when you click to vote, it was actually the other way around. So it's really dreadful anyway, but Dr. Rima knows who she's dealing with in this country. You're right, Wendy, it's an army, and they are really vicious, aren't they?
One of the problems I have is with Amazon.com and Amazon.co.uk. My book is there, and Amazon allows people to write reviews of the book. And all these trolls write false reviews, and you can see from what they've written that they haven't read the book, but they write what a terrible book it is and how badly written it is and all that sort of thing, and they give it 1 star, which, of course, lowers the average of the stars that appears on the main page.
Of course.
So, yes, so it's completely unfair, and I've spoken to Amazon about it, and they said that what I must do is get all my friends to write positive reviews and give it 5 stars, but that's unethical. You know, I'm not going to behave unethically just because the trolls behave unethically, so...
it's amazing, isn't it? It's absolutely... Dr. Rima's just had that with her email servers. They went down, didn't they, Doc?
Oh, this is so interesting.
It's incredible.
We did a 16-hour vaccine truth marathon, and we said to people, tell you what, we would like to give you the ebook of this marathon completely free. And by the way, people can get it if they're listening and they'd like it. All you have to do is go to our website, put in your email address, and we will send it to you as our gift along with our newsletter. Completely free, and your emails don't go anywhere except to us. And so about 18,000 people in a couple of weeks said, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. I'd really like to have this. And they joined our email list. Now, the only way anyone can get any of our emails is by opting in. We don't buy lists. We don't borrow lists. It's an entirely 100% opted-in list. So we had about 18,000 people opt in. And suddenly we found ourselves completely shut off. Our email server company said, to whom we pay actually good money, or what passes for good money, you know, fiat money, they said, you've been shut down, you can't send any emails. And we said, why is that? And they said, because spam reports have been made. And we said, well, there's no possible way for our emails to be reported as spam because everyone is opted in and every email has an unsubscribe link at the bottom. And so, and you know, we have very, very low spam scores before we send them out. And they said, well, nonetheless, you're dead. And we said, well, why don't you reinstate us because these are fake spam, they're spam spam. And they said, nope, you're dead. And so we were completely cut off from communication by bogus spam complaints that were entered by people who went on the list in order to get us shut down. Whee! So we spent an entire week looking around the world for servers that will not behave in this way. We found one, and we're up and running again. Just one of the joys of saying what the globalist cabal doesn't want you to say.
You're constantly in getting in trouble, Dr. Rima, all the time.
I know. I must have a problem. Maybe I need medication.
Always in trouble. It means that what you're doing is right, though, isn't it? I mean, what you're doing is correct. We have
all the right enemies. We have all the right enemies, Adam. If you go online and you look up my name or General Stubblebine, our president's name, or Ralph's name, you discover what terrible, terrible, terrible people we are.
Evil.
Ooh, we're bad.
Trying to help people, Dr. Rima, how dare you?
It is bad.
Goodness
that
me.
It is bad, I have to admit.
Not too good. Wendy, keep moving on here about the protests. Let us know more.
Yes.
The dates, things like that.
They're all on the 21st of June, which is a Sunday. The Sydney one is at 1 p.m. at the Town Hall, and the Melbourne one is at 1 p.m. at Parliament House. Now, they've set up times for the other four, Perth, Adelaide, Canberra and Brisbane, but they haven't actually got a locality yet. So if people want to know where to go, they can go to the Facebook page called No Jab, No Pay, No Way, which is a very clever title, I think, that Damien came up with. Because what the government calls their new policy, where they're not going to pay childcare for children who haven't been vaccinated, is No Jab, No Play, No Pay for Childcare. So Damien came up with the name No Jab, No Pay, No Way for the protests.
I think it's a wonderful name. I got an email saying that the events had been canceled. And I'm assuming, I wrote immediately and I said, is that true? And they said, no. So I'm assuming you're being scammed and spammed.
Yes. Don't believe it, yeah.
God, these people have nothing better to do.
You know? They are desperate.
They're desperate, Dr. Rima. It's unbelievable. It's astounding. And I got an email from Shayla Plosco, and she's organizing the event in Canberra.
Mm-hmm.
So she's saying we are doing a peaceful sit-down protest in the front of Parliament House. Red is the colour that they'd like everybody to wear. And it's meeting us at the Federation Mall, 21st of June, from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. And I'll put that up as a link as well accompanying this. So going on in Canberra, so that's very good, where the laws were passed down there. she's written up a really nice thing here with a pro parental rights and choices. So that's going to be great as well. What else can you tell us, Wendy, about the day? Seems like one of the biggest ones looks like it's going to be in Brisbane.
Oh, I wouldn't know about numbers, but I know that at the Sydney one there are going to be speakers, and that would be really, really interesting. But the exact names of, you know, who's going to speak hasn't been finalized yet. But there might be speakers at the other ones as well.
As well.
Oh, you have no idea how much I would love to be there. I am so delighted that you are doing this. I am so pleased that there's this mounting tide of demand to exercise personal rights on behalf of oneself and one's children. It's really wonderful. And I congratulate you all.
Thank you. One of the consequences of the threat of the new law is that people are already setting up childcare centres where they won't charge such a huge amount, because how it's going to affect some families is that if they're a single parent family and the parent works, or if they're a two parent family and both parents work, they're not going to get a subsidy for childcare. And childcare is extremely expensive in Australia. So it's actually not worth having a job if you have to pay for childcare.
Yeah.
And that's why the government gives pays a subsidy for childcare. And with this threat that 3% of families are not going to be able to get the childcare subsidy, the parents have to choose to either give up their job and go on the dole, or inject their child with all these filthy vaccines. But what one response is that people are setting up childcare facilities that are going to be cheap enough for vaccine-free families to use without getting the government subsidy, so they can stay working. If they live close enough to one of these new childcare facilities, they'll be able to still keep their job despite not getting the childcare subsidy.
Yes.
Don't you find that inspiring? I do.
Well, a lot of people are saying that they'd rather their children played with other vaccine-free children.
Yeah.
During the daytime.
Well, we had the story come out today, Wendy, in The Guardian, about vaccine-free childcare potentially catastrophic, they're saying. It was moves by parents to open vaccine-free and unvaccinated-friendly daycare centres in response to the federal government's no jab, no pay policy. This was, of course, brought in by Social Services Minister Scott Morrison. This man needs to be pushed back, very much so. But this came out in the paper, so they're talking about opening vaccine-free childcare centres, Dr. Rima, and the words that they've used here is catastrophic. This is by Early Childhood Australia.
Yes, it is catastrophic. No, I agree. It's catastrophic to their absolutely unfounded theories and their absolutely unfounded projections of what will happen when vaccine-free children, healthy children, are allowed to interact with other healthy children. It is catastrophic to their entire premise.
Yeah, well, if Early Childhood Australia cared about family values, they'd be supporting this and having a look at it. But it's just an amazing word they use there, catastrophic. Unbelievable. It shows you the fear-mongering. You know,
why is it
catastrophic?
Because they believe that it will cause huge outbreaks of disease, and then all the vaccinated children will catch the disease from the vaccine-free children, and that will be a catastrophe. You know, you'll have cases of measles happening like you did from Disneyland, and that's a catastrophe.
Ooh.
When you get 79 cases of measles in America, that's a catastrophe.
Yeah.
But during that same period, the number that I have is 53,000 children were diagnosed with autism during that same measles epidemic period. And that's not a catastrophe.
Yes. And one of the ploys that the vaccine industry is using at the moment is to spread the idea that it's better for a child to get autism than to get measles.
Well, from an economic point of view, from the pharmaceutical industry's point of view, absolutely, it is better. Now, from the child's point of view and the family's point of view and society's point of view, no. But when has the pharmaceutical industry ever cared about those other points of view?
That's unbelievable.
And they're trying to put out the idea that it's normal to have autism and you shouldn't worry about it, but be very afraid of measles.
Well, there is a very interesting backstory to that. If you go on the internet and you Google the phrase autism and inside job, you will see a webinar that the Natural Solutions Foundation did, and it's still available. It was a 3.5-hour webinar with world experts from all quarters of the globe. And we were talking about the fact that the vaccines are being perfected and honed to produce high-functioning autists for the purpose of serving as the technicians. Microsoft has announced that they will preferentially hire autistic workers. Vodafone, the world's largest telecommunications corporation. SAP, one of the largest financial services, electronic interface companies in the world. Goldman Sachs, the, shall we say, financial behemoth of no particular ethics or values. And a variety of other companies have announced that they will preferentially seek out autistic workers. They can be hired as disabled persons, so they're cheap as dirt to hire. They like routine. They don't have the social skills to combine and ask questions and form unions and revolt against inhuman conditions. They are interchangeable. There are lots of them. And this was memorialized in a speech given in the British Parliament by one of the members of the House of Lords, Sir Larry Friend. Not a friend to us. So vaccines are producing high-functioning autistic workers by design. And we presented quite a lot of powerful evidence to that horrifying conclusion. This is not an accident. This is not an error. And the physicians are simply, as Lenin called them, useful idiots.
It's Aldous Huxley, Brave New World, the Deltas.
These are the Deltas.
I don't know that they need one in 50 to have those qualities because, you know, there always has been some autism and some Asperger's around. But, of course, it's increasing a huge amount now, and one would suspect that vaccines are one of the reasons. But they won't do a study which compares the rate of autism in vaccinated children and in vaccine-free children. They make all sorts of excuses for not doing such a study. For instance, they say, oh, it would be too expensive, or, oh, it would mean that we have to withhold vaccines from children whose parents want the vaccines. And that's not true. You know, there are plenty of vaccine-free children that they could study, but they won't do such a study.
There are, as you know, about 5 studies that have been done examining exactly that, the rate of vaccinated versus unvaccinated, the rate of illnesses, including autism, in vaccinated and unvaccinated children, the Home First study, the Amish studies, the German studies. There are quite a number of studies.
They're not actually valid studies because they haven't been done on a random, they haven't been done in a scientific way,
It's not their fault.
They're not getting the millions of dollars from the big pharma to do studies, so they don't have the option of doing the studies in the correct way. And the people who are getting money from big pharma refuse to do studies in the correct way. So they do studies which look at the age at which people become or get diagnosed as autistic, or they sort of circle around the issue instead of actually comparing children with children. For instance, there's one which they call the Madsen study, which compares person years with person years, doesn't compare people with people. Well, of course,
no,
that's
but
not
that's
surprising.
That's a completely fraudulent study. There are absolutely, totally fraudulent. There are studies, there are many models, as you know, for doing studies, and there are studies that compare equivalent populations of children where the only variable is that they have been vaccinated or not. There are studies that look at large numbers of children who have not been vaccinated and compare them to similar children who have been vaccinated. And over there are about five of them. And over and over and over, the results are very clear.
Where have they been published? Where have they been published?
They've been published in epidemiological journals. They've been published in peer-reviewed journals, but not necessarily The Lancet, a totally corrupt journal, and not necessarily the British Medical Journal or the New England. Oh, I have to tell you a story. I'm also, in addition to being interested in vaccines, since I practice drug-free medicine, I'm interested in nutrients and herbs as well and frequency. And very CBD, the non-psychoactive part of the hemp plant. And so I did a study because there is a belief system that THC, the psychoactive part, is necessary for the magic that hemp actually works. And so I said, I don't think so. And I did a study looking for the scientific evidence. And what I discovered was, as I thought, THC is well beloved, but it's not where the magic is. The magic is in CBD. And I wrote a paper with 200 references. It's a very powerful scientific paper. And I finished it on, I did it with Ralph Fusatola, who may or may not still be with us. And I finished it up with him on Easter Sunday. And, you know, when you're at the computer, there are no holidays if you don't want them. So I submitted the paper to the New England Journal of Medicine on Easter Sunday. It was rejected in less than 2 hours. So I submitted it to the Journal of the American Medical Association on Easter Sunday. It was rejected in less than an hour. So I submitted it to the British Medical Journal and to The Lancet, sequentially, of course, because you're not supposed to submit them at the same time. And this paper was so unwelcome that before anybody had a chance to read it, it was rejected by a human being with a letter saying, "Go away." It was very funny. That's the same thing that happens with these studies that show that vaccines are deleterious.
But there are some journals that would publish, you know, articles and studies that have been done, you know, where they compare children with children instead
yes,
of.
Yes, and actually, there are some very nice studies. Three of them are German, and two of them that I know are published in English. One was published by Dr. Meyer Eisenstein, who unfortunately is no longer among the living, but he published a study on the home first practice of over 5,000 children. There was one autistic child, and that child came into the practice autistic and had been vaccinated. All of the other children, all 5,000 and some, were unvaccinated. And they had an astoundingly low rate of asthma and ectopic disease and no autism and so on. Unheard of. And the records are very, very good, very powerful.
Well, that you know, I would find that completely believable. But the way that the Big Pharma moves the goalposts all the time is that they say you have to do their type of study. And it would be good if they would do one of their type of study, but do it properly. You know, but they won't do it. That's the problem.
Has there ever been a totally independent study done proving that vaccines are safe? I'm not talking about drug company or CDC ones. I mean, just like an independent study that you know of, Dr. Emma or Wendy, that has been done saying that, yes, vaccines are safe and don't cause autism, that are believable?
Methodologically sound studies? No,
yes,
not one.
Absolutely airtight, proving.
I know of a minimum of 89 studies that are methodologically sound that show the connection.
I
know
that
of
up.
Whistleblowers.
I put that up. Yeah, I got that one. It's great. But then they'll show you 89 against. You know what I mean?
But those 89 do not actually, as Dr. Rima says, they're not methodologically sound, because they skirt around the issue. They don't actually study the issue, you know, to find out the facts. It's what the cigarette companies used to do in the old days, when they proved all the time that smoking does not cause lung cancer and it does not cause heart disease.
It's the same thing, yeah, good analogy.
It's the same type of study. They skirt around it instead of actually trying to find out.
But meanwhile, the proof is all around you. I mean, I put up so much stuff. I've just got one in front of me now from Perth Now newspaper saying that more than 3,000 students with autism are enrolled in WA public schools.
Mm.
It's saying teachers are struggling to care for the skyrocketing number of students with autism. And as well with the normal kids. This also was from Queensland. Out of Queensland as well, they're skyrocketing there to autism. And the teachers' federations up there are saying that they've never seen such high numbers of autistic children. And they're putting them in these classrooms. And what are the teachers supposed to do? They're really struggling with this. Mm-hmm. So the evidence is all around us, isn't it?
As a child psychiatrist, let me tell you, and by the way, a drug-free psychiatrist, I have never written a prescription for a drug, either a psychiatric drug or a medical drug, because they're not necessary. So I have a fairly skewed view of these things. But as a child psychiatrist, let me tell you that the new normal is being defined as autistic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that is perhaps the most telling piece of information about this agenda that I spoke about before, to create autistic workers, to change the goalposts so that normal has no meaning any longer.
And they're saying that a lifetime of autism is better than a week of measles.
Yeah, see, they're normalizing it now. And I saw on the American morning show, it's called Today. You know, the most popular American show in the world, probably, the Morning Breakfast Show. And they had all these panel of experts, as they call themselves, up there talking about autism. And they were honestly saying, I saw this, they were saying, should we label autistic children autistic anymore? Is that sort of discriminatory towards them? Should we just be, as you said, moving the goalposts and treating them as not autistic? So those boundaries have gone. And that's what they were saying. And so this is what Dr. Rima's talking about, the Delta Force. Because I've worked in a lot of places, and especially all the supermarkets and places, there's a lot of autistic people now. And I'm not sure, I did read that, are doctors even diagnosing it properly anymore? I mean, are they, it seems that it's all mixed up now with the ADD and the autism and these, you know, the problems that kids have. What types of brain injuries are kids getting from vaccines in the first place? I wouldn't honestly know, but it seems like it's just compounding and getting worse and worse and worse.
You know, this puts me in mind of smallpox. One of the things that you hear over and over is, but vaccines eliminated smallpox.
I hear that millions of times, Dr. Rima.
Vaccines eliminated polio.
Yep.
And the truth of the matter is that vaccines eliminated nothing, because what happened was that the name of the disease, smallpox, was changed to monkeypox. And shazam, overnight, smallpox disappeared. There were no more cases of smallpox. All of the diagnoses were monkeypox. But then the New England Journal of Medicine published a study in which they said, hang on a minute, this is a little odd. Monkeypox, we've never heard of monkeypox. Let's look at the pathology samples from people who have died of this disease or who have not died of the disease, who have recovered from the disease, but we have pathological samples, or pathology samples, I should say. And so they examined these pathology samples and looked for viruses, and they found that the virus in these people who had either died or recovered from this disease, the virus was the smallpox virus. But the name of the disease was monkeypox. So administratively, the vaccine eliminated the disease. In fact, virologically, it did no such thing.
Same with polio.
Go ahead.
There actually is a virus that causes monkeypox, and there's camelpox, and there are a variety, and like this cowpox, you know, the one that they claim was used to eliminate smallpox, and it didn't. But these viruses do exist. You do get a variety of different types of poxes.
Yes, but the disease that was being called monkeypox, and yes, there is indeed a monkeypox, but the disease that was being called monkeypox is in fact smallpox. It was just
which country was this? Which country was this in?
Africa. And unfortunately,
Africa is not a country.
No, Africa is not a country. That is absolutely correct. But the smallpox eradication program was carried out in many countries in Africa.
The funny thing about the smallpox eradication program is that when they did South America, they missed one country entirely due to a clerical error. But they also eliminated smallpox there, even though they did no vaccinations in that country, which was Guyana.
Yes, yes. The whole thing is, as my father used to say, as full of beans as a Christmas pudding.
So was that like all across Africa, or was there was it
localized in a variety of countries? But then in 1970, correct me, I believe it was 72, but it could have been 74. The World Health Organization declared that smallpox had been eradicated and that it now only existed in laboratory collections. The virus now only existed in laboratory collections in World Health Organization laboratories in several places around the world, Scotland being one, Edinburgh being one, and I believe there is a they said that there was a repository in Atlanta under the aegis of the CDC, an organization which has lost numerous pathological samples and kind of lost track of where they put the smallpox virus and things on numerous occasions. But the World Health Organization intentionally changed the names, changed the goalposts, and unfortunately, the guy who thought this up happens to be a guy I went to medical school with. His name is Larry Brilliant. He was working for the World Health Organization, and he came up, since the vaccine program wasn't working, he came up with the absolutely brilliant idea, did Larry Brilliant, of an administrative change that got rid of the problem. Not atypical.
The Russians have also got stocks of smallpox virus, and it was 1986 that the World Health Organization announced that it was all gone.
You know, you're right. You're right. I apologize. You're absolutely right.
But, and I don't know how good the Russians are at keeping control of what they've got.
Yeah.
not inspiring. One would have to say not inspiring. So this whole thing is completely filled with lies and distortions. Polio is now said to be eradicated, for instance, in India, because they gave it a new name. They call it non-polio acute flaccid paralysis. And that makes it not polio. But when they examine the pathology samples from the children, and by definition it only occurs in people under 15, when they examine the pathology samples from the children who are now paralyzed or dead, all 53,000 of them in the 13 months before India was declared a polio-free zone in March 2014, they find the same virus that's in the vaccine, in the pentavalent polio vaccine.
Shady stuff, and this has just happened in Mexico. What vaccine was that, to refresh my memory? Wendy, did you
see
that?
The one that killed so many children?
Yes, but it's worse than what we're being told.
I believe it was the BCG and Hep B vaccine combination. Wasn't it?
Yeah, there were 17 children who died in China from the hepatitis B vaccine. And if you go back a few years, there's more reports of it. And they're claiming, again, in Mexico, it was dirty needles. But this seems to be something much, much far or more sinister to me. Because South America is a testing ground for these people, you know?
Some vaccine lots are not made the same as other vaccine lots, and some are more dangerous than others. And it's interesting that way back in 1962, the CDC sent out a memorandum saying that vaccine lots had to be spread over North America, because if there was a hot lot that caused a lot of deaths, it would easily be identified if a whole lot of babies were dying in one place. So therefore, they must spread out all the lots so that the deaths would also be spread out and it wouldn't be detected that it was the vaccine.
Exactly. As I was about to mention exactly the same thing, Wendy.
So does that mean they're covering their tracks then?
You think?
That implies that it's intentional.
That was intent. That particular thing was definitely intentional to cover up any future.
Oh, God.
Because there'd been a whole hoo-ha about a whole lot of deaths that were caused in Tennessee from one lot of vaccine that was very badly made or made worse than the others. So then they sent out a memorandum that all the lots, you mustn't send one lot to one area. You must spread it out. You spread out every lot to different parts of North America so that, if a bad lot has been made and causes a whole lot of deaths, the deaths will be spread all over the country and people won't be able to pinpoint the cause so easily.
Goodness me. And, it's unbelievable. And we were talking on a previous show, Wendy, about the Fluvax shot. And you can go back to 2010. You remember that when it was injuring children and children were being sent to emergency rooms vomiting. And one child was brain damaged and their parents sued the state government over that. And then they said there was going to be this national ban of it. But then what they did is they came back and said, well, don't give it to kids under five.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went through all the reports. I kept them all. This mm-hmm. is from 2010 to 2015.
And they are and still giving
they're
it still, to children.
They're still doing it. They're still giving the kids this flu vax. And there's other vaccines in the mix now. But this is the particular one I was looking at. And even a lady put a story up on our Facebook page from 2015, just a few weeks back, that it's been found that that same Fluvax has been given to children under five in Australia, and they're just warning people about it now not to do it. So it goes back right back to 2010. Why is this thing still in circulation? It's incredible. So, you know, we said if your kids are out there, I mean, and they're under five, they could well be getting this. And I don't understand. If it's not safe for kids under five, is it safe for kids who have just turned five or are five and a half? I mean, what about kids who don't have a strong immune system? I mean, it's unbelievable.
You know, it sounds to me, Adam, like you must be an enemy of the state.
Yeah, I know. I'm an enemy. Yeah, when kids are getting brain damaged. And we had this from another one in America, Wendy, another one in the UK. I've put them all up. Brain damage from the flu shots. And people are still, this one lady in the United States in Florida took a perfectly healthy young girl down to get the flu shot. She's not going to walk. She's been in a coma. She's brain damaged for life. Mm. And it's like, well, the parents are saying the flu shot did it. Well, we don't really know, do we? You're a conspiracy theorist. It's really in your face now. And I think,
it's always been the case that parents who report that their child has become what it has become because of a reaction to vaccine has been treated very badly by the medical establishment.
Oh, yeah, exactly. They're like car salesmen, aren't they? You buy a new car, they'll tell you anything. And once you drive out in your car and you've got problems with it, they don't want to know you anymore.
Mm. It's like women who are raped. It's a bit better in some places under some circumstances. But you blame the victim. And you tell the victim that it's all in her head and she must have been asking for it and wasn't her skirt too short and why did she have that drink and create a fantasy in which she can't possibly have been a victim because that would be inconvenient in many different ways. Well, it's the same thing. This is a rape by needle or patch or inhalation that rapes the immune system, rapes the integrity of the individual, rapes the tranquility and normalcy of the family when the child shows overt vaccine damage, and then adds insult to economic injury, to emotional injury, to physiological injury by denial and social assault.
Exactly, but what do you do, Wendy? What does a poor family do when they go down and they get that flu jab or one of those shots, and that child has a reaction in the back seat of the car or on the living room floor later on? And here we are from the West Australian newspaper.
Or the
from
baby dies.
Yeah,
dies, and suddenly we have a diagnosis of shaken baby syndrome. That's another webinar that we did. The Natural Solutions Foundation did another 3.5-hour, very highly referenced webinar called The Myth of the Shaken Baby Syndrome or Shaken Baby Hoax. It is a hoax. Occasionally, a child is intentionally injured, but there are physiological changes that go along with it. When a child dies of a vaccine injury, there are physiological biochemical changes that are virtually never looked for. The child typically has an autoimmune response, and typically the pancreas of the child is no longer making insulin. Now, you'll remember that insulin carries the glucose into the cell so that the cell has fuel. And in diabetics, that's a problem. The glucose stays on the outside of the cell. The blood sugar goes way, way up, and the cells are starving at the same time. Well, insulin has another function. You may remember, if you took biochemistry, that insulin also ushers vitamin C into the cells. And if the insulin is insufficient because of the autoimmune response triggered by the vaccine, which is not uncommon at all, then the child can die of acute fulminating scurvy, lack of vitamin C, caused by the vaccine. And Dr. Michael Innes of Australia has proven this absolutely brilliantly. But it's the parent or the babysitter who is accused of criminal behavior and typically sent to jail, sometimes for life, because we have to cover the vaccine damage, don't we?
A lot of those people who've been jailed are being released at the moment. There's a whole movement, and there are a lot of lawyers working on this, and they're succeeding in getting a whole lot of wrongly accused parents and babysitters released, especially in Britain. It's happening.
I'm very glad to hear that. I knew that a few of them had been released, and I have been involved in the court testimony for some of them. Unfortunately, not enough of them. So I'm very glad to hear that that's meeting with success. Now, the corollary of that is, well, what did kill the baby? And the answer is the vaccines.
And the interesting thing about insulin is that with the old-fashioned DPT vaccine, the whooping cough component being made of the whole cell pertussis bacteria, that is still being used in a lot of third world countries. And it's actually had the effect of decreasing insulin levels to the point where the blood sugar became dangerously low 12 to 16 days after vaccination.
Yes.
And that is and the highest rate of so-called SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, occur 12 to 16 days after vaccination.
Yes.
Oh,
But the new whooping cough vaccine contains an acellular component for the pertussis component, and time will tell. It's very difficult to find out what it does and doesn't do because it's given at the same time as nine other vaccines.
It's so, Russian roulette.
Yes.
Well, so in addition to that, and you're quite right, Wendy. But in addition to that, the acellular pertussis has shifted the symptom profile away from the older children and back into the infant, and shifted the the severity of the disease. So we're playing God, and we're playing doctor, and we're playing roulette with Mother Nature in ways that we don't even begin to appreciate the significance of. Don't even begin. And that's one of the things that worries me about geoengineering. It's one of the things that worries me about nuclear power. It's one of the things that scares the living daylights out of me about genetic engineering. We know so little, and we have so much technological capacity to do such unbridled long-range damage.
Adam, I think that I need to go.
Yes,
sorry.
I was going to wrap it up soon. It's been a great conversation. And we're gone over time, so that's fine. We'll finish up now with you, Wendy, and it's been great to have you on, and maybe we can get you on the Dr. Rima show as well with Ralph sometime.
I would love that. I would love that, Wendy.
That will air in the United States on VTR, isn't it, Dr. Rima?
VTR radio. Yeah, actually, it's all over the world, anywhere there's a computer, because it's internet radio, which is wonderful.
Great. Yeah, we can get you on there as well, Wendy. So it's been fantastic talking to you today about your book, and I hope some people go out and grab that book and have a read.
Thank you.
Of that, and you'll be at the marches
in Melbourne. Yes.
In Melbourne on the 21st of June, and they will go all around Australia, and we'll keep people updated as it nears that date.
And, yes, thank you.
Any information you want me to put up or anything, Wendy, just email me that. Any stories you get, we can put them up and keep on top of this. Because
thank you.
It's very important to try and preserve our rights, isn't it? And
yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and
it's our freedom of choice. It's our bodies, you know. It's my choice, you know, what goes into my body or my children's bodies. And everyone should have that choice. And it's this is not good what's happening, and we need to stop this. Or is this going to get worse?
Yes.
Wendy, we would, the Natural Solutions Foundation would love to bring your information forward as well. So please make sure that you get it to us. And we'll feature it on our newsletters and our website and in our radio broadcast. And yes, I'd love to have you as our guest.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Okay, Wendy, thanks for joining us for this conversation today. And I'll put this up, and I hope people can get this out and listen to it and share it and get along to those marches.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's only one day. Get out there and go and protest and stick up for your rights. You know, it's all we have left. It's very important.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, nice talking to you both.
Thanks so much, Wendy, and take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Honorable committee members, I am a lifelong New Jersey resident. I graduated Rutgers College and Rutgers Law School and practiced law in New Jersey from 1971 until my retirement in 2006. I have been an ordained minister since 1974, and I am both the president of the Institute for Health Research and a trustee of the Natural Solutions Foundation, an international NGO focused on health and health freedom. I come before you today as a private citizen. I oppose A-1931. In recent weeks, many concerned communicants have been coming to me to talk about vaccination of themselves and their children. They are deeply conflicted, fearing for their children and wanting to do the right thing. Many of them have serious moral and philosophical scruples, which lead them to religious conscientious objection to vaccination. In providing ministerial counseling to these people, I often discuss the obligations of a parent to their child and the ethics of taking risks with the child. Some parents feel they have a religious moral obligation to protect their child from known risks. They believe they cannot challenge what they see as the child's God-given immune system without doubting their faith and denying their belief in a beneficent God. I assert the right of informed consent. Enshrined in the First Amendment, the Helsinki Declaration, and the AMA Code of Ethics, which by definition necessarily includes the right to refuse any treatment. Without that right to refuse any treatment, informed consent is meaningless, a mere mockery. I personally stand with moral exemplar Mahatma Gandhi, who famously wrote, quote, "Conscientious objectors to vaccination should stand alone, if need be, against the whole world in defense of their conviction," end quote. And that is the intensity of religious belief that motivates the admittedly small percentage of New Jersey families, as well as non-parents, who choose not to vaccinate for religious reasons. I come here today to ask you to resist further burdening the religious expressive association rights of these families and of those who seek these rights for themselves. What you are being told by the high-powered CDC taxpayer-funded vaccine mandate supporters is simply disinformation. The National Association of County and City Health Officials, the NACCHO, speaks for bureaucracy, not for freedom of health choice. Last year, a New Jersey administrative court judge awarded a nurse compensation after being fired when she refused vaccination on philosophical grounds, ruling that the religious exemption should be understood to reach all such personal beliefs that are as important to the person as deeply held religious beliefs are to the believers. To do otherwise would be to put the First Amendment into jeopardy. This is the correct view of the law of vaccine conscientious objection, and any attempt by the legislature to burden the free exercise of religion will be by the courts as violations of expressive association rights. Instead of restricting religious liberty, if you believe you must pass a law, I urge you to legislate to adopt extensions of the exemption law to codify the case law that protects philosophical and religious conscientious objection to vaccination and to any mandated medical treatment. In 1903, the North Carolina Supreme Court wisely observed in State versus Biggs, quote, "Medicine is an experimental, not an exact science. All the law can do is to regulate and safeguard the use of powerful and dangerous remedies, like the knife and drugs, but it cannot forbid dispensing with them. When the master, who was himself called the good physician, was told that others than his followers were casting out devils and curing diseases, he said, 'Forbid them not.'" The constitutional restrictions on governmental interference with religious liberty and expressive association are strong. The religious beliefs of each person must be respected. Quote, "Neither this court nor any branch of this government will consider the merits or fallacies of a religion, nor will the court compare the beliefs, dogmas, and practices of a newly organized religion with those of an older, more established religion." End quote. Universal Life Church versus United States of America. I sincerely admonish the Assembly of New Jersey to respect the religious scruples of the non-vaccinating members of society. A 1931 seriously burdens religion by compelling state-approved expression, by requiring more than a simple assertion of right permitted by the current law. Thank you for acting in our best interests and preserving our God-given and Constitution-guaranteed First Amendment freedom, the integrity and privacy of the family and each individual in New Jersey requires no less. And that's what I told the Assembly today.
Great speech there from Ralph Fusitola. Thank you very much, Ralph. And we'll be back next week. Hope you enjoyed this show.